Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Kelly, I think the matches that needed the most work that are also near the top of the card, that had the biggest opportunity to sell this pay-per-view, was the men's world title match, Hangman Adam Page against CM Punk, MJF and Wardlow, which felt further along storyline-wise. They had done a lot. And the Hardys and the Young Bucks was another match that I felt like they could do quite a bit on today's show to elevate what should be a dream match. Which of those three do you think they did the best job on and which the worst job on? And do you agree with my assessment that those are the three that had an opportunity to help sell the show that needed some work?
Yeah, that, certainly that's where the biggest gaps were. Real big spots, those gaps. 1 week cannot save all the issues, but I thought they did a better job with some of them. Not having the Bucks really do anything at all was a really, really bad. That's easily the choice for worst. I thought Matt was pretty fiery in a pretty straightforward promo. I liked what the Hardys did. It doesn't make up for so much neglect, and it certainly doesn't make sense that the Bucks were not there, but I thought that was the worst. Obviously, great stuff in Wardlow, MJF. I don't think you even said that was one of the gaps.
No, I did, but I felt like that was the one that was furthest along, but they had this stage to get through to amplify or elevate the interest. But, yeah, I want to be clear. Those are the three matches that I think this show could convince people to buy it. It's not necessarily a reflection on the lack of progress in the feuds hype so far, because MJF Wardlow has obviously gotten much more hype than the Hardys Bucks or Hangman, even and including Hangman Punk.
Yes. Okay. So insofar as that one counts, then yes, that would be the one that they did the best job of today, opening with a hot start. Just the stacking the deck always works. It usually works. If you do it every single month, maybe there's diminishing returns, but they're in a point with Wardlow where that kind of thing works and he needs the hill to climb, and it made sense to do what they were doing with him. And if you're a well-traveled wrestling fan, you knew how this was going to happen. The only way for him to win the match was a ref bump. So you just wondered how that ref bump would transpire. So I guess straightforward, even given all the moving parts and things like that, but it just seems like the excitement around that, the excitement the crowd gave it, it seems like it certainly worked on them the best. And I guess I would agree that's the one I'm most hyped for now.
Yeah. I had mixed feelings about all of it. And you touched on some of it. I thought the Hardys promo was way above expectations. It was one of Jeff Hardy's better promos, and Matt, brought it. There was thought put into it. It framed the match. It made sense. I'm curious what the story is on the EVPs, Matt and Nick Jackson, the Young Bucks, not being on the go-home show. Is there a story behind that? How do you – I mean, that's a dream match, and we don't get a promo from them? I mean, it feels like there's got to be a story there. Because that's – if they're just hanging around in the back and they had nothing to say, I mean, that's egregious. That is a match that had the least foundation – built on television other than just what the match inherits because of the history of the two teams. And I don't think they went very, very far, in terms of the Hardys promo did a lot, but they didn't do anything beyond that. So I think they could have done more. I assume there's some reason for that. MJF War though, just continued on the trajectory that it was on. And I thought that they moved forward. They gave people the moment of the handcuffs breaking. And there was a big pop for that. And MJF was obnoxious. And I think people now, even more so, want to see the match against MJF. Hangman and Punk is the one that I spent the most time talking about. And I thought I mean, if that segment, if there was more context provided in the lead up, would have worked better for me. Because again, when I say I have mixed feelings, like my mixed feelings about MJF Wardlow, by the way, are I just don't like the parade of security guys running it and Wardlow hitting them one at a time like a cartoon. I just think that takes me out of it. It's just, they take that too far. So that was kind of a note I made about one thing I didn't like about that. But back to Hangman and Punk, I guess the bigger thing is I just don't understand why Hangman is upset. Like, he's saying these things. They're not platitudes, but they're sort of these, like, random buzzwords and phrases about Punk. You say you're for workers' rights, but I know what you do off camera backstage. And it's like, what does that mean? Like, is Punk going to rebut it? Are the announcers going to rebut it? Are we supposed to know what it means? I just don't think the audience is listening going, ooh. I think they're going, what's he talking about? I like the swagger and the attitude and the confidence that Hangman showed, but I wish he did it as a babyface the last 6-plus months, not acting like a dick otherwise. Like, I just don't think people buy Hangman is suddenly this dick. And he was just a dick to Punk. And so to me, it just feels like, well, we want to have fans cheer Punk when he wins, so let's have Hangman be unlikable. But they didn't really think through an origin story or some sort of like progression where the fans would go, oh, I know what Hangman's saying. I disagree with him. He's overreacting. Instead, it just feels sort of like random heelish things to say out of any kind of coherent context. And so ultimately I remain disappointed in it, even if I liked Hangman's edge and swagger. And I thought Punk was good here as sort of the calm voice of reason. Who's like, I'm going to beat you when it's not personal. I thought that was good. I think there's much, much, much room for Hangman to be better here and quite a bit of room for Punk to be better. I would have liked Punk to show fire and see more like excited about what it would mean to be AEW champion. And I didn't really get that sense. Like, yes, he talked to Hangman about, you know, the journey that you're on, I paved the way. Okay. You know, how many wrestlers have said that to other people over the years? I wanted Punk to just get people excited in AEW and the AEW fan base about what it means if he wins and how this is a culmination of him winning a world title that he can be proud to hold and that he's going to be proud to defend. And it's going to be an era that a lot of fans waited a long time for. But, you know, after he beats Hangman and he's confident he will, there's a lot of wrestlers in AEW that he's excited to defend against. And he hopes to put together a type of run that'll rival, you know, how people talk about Samoa Joe's ROH title run. And we just didn't get that. So I just felt like there were some itches left unscratched for me that were just sort of like out there and obvious to go with. And so I just think ultimately they get like a, you know, kind of a C+, B- for me compared to what I imagine the potential of how psyched I could be to see this match and how motivated I think they could have the fan base to buy a pay-per-view to see history made for Punk on Sunday.
That's a lot of criticism for the one scene, but don't worry, I've got even more. It seems like the end point of the scene was for Punk to sucker Hangman into getting into this angry hothead version of himself. But it didn't really work because that's what Hangman already is. The announcers tried to tell the story. They say CM Punk just got what he wanted. But that was already happening. Like, he didn't cause a change in Hangman. He didn't knock him off his game. Hangman was already off his game, and he showed it throughout the entire promo. So from that sense, it's hard. I can't quite grasp what they want me to think Punk was trying to get Hangman to do. Did he just want to get punched in the face? Because if so, that's pretty weak. I don't understand. There were so many parts of this that almost felt like they coalesced, but in the end, I'm not sure who they want me to cheer, why they want me to cheer them, and what Punk's impetus in this scene was. And absolutely, I was thinking the same thing. Hey, it's just business. I just want this, which is fine. Like, I understand that in real life, but it was a really flat way to sell one of the only four pay-per-views you do a year.
Yeah. Yep. I don't think this was, you know, Booker of the Year work. in the lead up to Double or Nothing in most areas. And I mean, Thunder Rosa cut a nice fiery promo. They played music over her crescendo. Shivani seemed, who seems perpetually happy, seemed like upset by that. Like, what are you guys thinking in the background? You know, Jade Cargill and Anna Jay, we got a little video package catching us up on the, you know, cramming for, you know, like cramming the night before a test type setup for this match. I mean, one of my biggest gripes of the show was the Jericho fireball on a stagehand, where it's like, that was mean of you, Jericho. What are you thinking? Well, how about he gets arrested? Like, that's a freaking felony. You don't throw a fireball at a stagehand, and then he gets to do a color commentary, and everybody acts like, well, it's just normal. Like, it diminished throwing a fireball at Eddie Kingston, which, by the way, they already undercut by having Jericho on color commentary in sort of an official position as color commentator 2 days later on Rampage, bragging about it. There's no repercussions. It's what I say about when heels are trying to get heat at ringside, and like, you know, Jimmy Smith on Monday, he's like, oh, look at the great teamwork of the heels. No, the heels are doing that because they want fans to resent them. You don't want to applaud them for ingenuity. You want to criticize them for fighting with outside of the structure of the rules that you're supposed to abide by so we can find out who the better wrestler is. And if you do that consistently, then heel heat works, even in 2022 when people get pulled into the storyline and the emotions and who they're rooting for. With Jericho, he throws a fireball because he wants to show he's a wizard, and I'm surprised Jericho is like doing this. To me, it's like he doesn't even care if he's doing something so flippant as I'm going to throw a fireball at a stagehand and I'm going to get scolded verbally briefly by the announcers, but also welcomed on color commentary to tell jokes. Like, I just don't think it's worth it. I think it waters down what a fireball is supposed to mean. I mean, this guy's got facial burns, maybe second degree burns, and it's just a frivolous, I'm a wizard joke. And the announcer's going, that was mean. And it's like, well, now I don't take it seriously at all. That should have been a big deal when they did it at Eddie Kingston. They framed it and followed up on it poorly. And then they do this needlessly tonight. So I didn't like that either. I think the pay-per-view is going to be really fun to watch. I thought tonight's show was really fun to watch. There's some good wrestling. But I'm not seeing top-level booking psychology or execution here, Kelly.
And I don't know why we keep going back to the problems in pro wrestling for as long as I've been watching it of there being no consequences for one's actions, like a 70s or earlier Western where 100 people get killed and nobody's in trouble. It just seems we're going back to that. And that's all over wrestling. Like with NXT, in the last few of my recaps, I've been like, I can't believe how much crime the baby faces are committing and not getting in any trouble. They're on camera stealing cars and moving them and doing things like that. And there's no repercussions. And I'm once again going back to the other question that wrestling never quite seems to know how to answer. Are the cameras supposed to be there? Are you just showing me something as part of a fictional narrative? Because you got to choose one. And if it's both, then it doesn't really work. And it's just amazing how pervasive this is in American wrestling TV right now.
Yeah. I think there's stuff being thrown on TV because they think it'll be entertaining and some ephemeral. Wouldn't it be cool if we did this way? And it's detached from the original way that it was done in a way that made sense. And if you don't understand the foundation of how this stuff made sense and the effect it was supposed to have, and you're just sort of doing it because it'd be fun if we did it, you know, let's turn the lights on and off all the time. You know, let's do that. It's like, you want this stuff to matter when you do it. You want it to make sense. Well, we've got some emails on some of the topics we're bringing up and other things, and we've got a bunch of callers on hold. So I want to get other opinions and more feedback And so before we do that, let's pause and introduce ourselves in the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, May 25th, 2022, following AEW Dynamite, the final Dynamite before Sunday's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. There'll be a Rampage between now and then and a countdown show. Some of the best stuff will be on that countdown show that very few people, relatively speaking, will see. And that's coming up this weekend. So we're here to talk about Dynamite, and we've got phone calls and emails that will add perspectives to the program. But first, let me introduce ourselves. This is Wade Keller. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And I appreciate you live streaming or downloading the show today. We do, by the way, have our first VIP sale of the year that will be detailing in just a bit. You can go VIP in time for our post-pay-per-view roundtable, VIP exclusive, this Sunday night, and get everything else that we offer with our VIP membership in the meantime. And we'll give you details on getting a VIP membership for $8 off, which brings the one-month sub down to $1.99 if you want to give us a try or come back for more. In fact, I'll just say the coupon code, if you want to dive in and do that, at pwtorch.com/govip is SALE22. SALE22. And if you enter that, you'll get $8 off a one-month sub. You can also apply that to a three-month or one-year sub. Give us a try. See what it's all about. We're compatible with Apple Podcasts, native app, and just about every other podcast app out there. You can also stream the shows directly from our VIP exclusive ad-free website. It's never been easier to subscribe with PayPal, credit card, or debit card and take advantage of that sale. The coupon code does not work through Patreon or directly through signing up using your Apple account. Those are two other ways to sign up with VIP membership in general, but the coupon codes only apply by going to pwtorch.com/govip and then signing up with credit card, debit card, or PayPal through our main website. But that will give you compatibility with Apple Podcasts if you're an iPhone user using the native podcast app with a single click, by the way. No passwords to enter, no advanced settings. We've really got a cool setup to make it frictionless and easy to go VIP. So give it a shot. Again, that's SALE22 is the coupon code. The other voice you hear so far is Kelly Wells. He is a PWTorch.com contributor, longtime beat writer of the NXT TV show, and also the PW Torch Daily Cast dedicated to covering NXT every week. PWT talks NXT. Kelly, welcome back.
Thank you. Yes, Kelly Wells, and you can find me on social media at SpookyMilk or at SpookyMilk.games. NXT tolerator is what I've been saying. Although even that is getting to be a little strong at times. New Japan completist, so I am definitely looking ahead in the AEW. Sorry, I just went through a time warp. AEW calendar to Forbidden Door. Very, very excited about that.
Very good. Well, we had some things to talk about on tonight's show related to some of that, so we'll get to that. But let's get to phone calls. I want to be sure to give people the time to express themselves on the show, and you can give us a call if you haven't yet, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That's 347-215-8558, and when you call, push 1. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Okay, so let's get to our calls, and let's begin with Nick in Brattleboro. Nick, good to talk to you. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Good evening. How you doing, Wade? Kelly, good to talk to you, too. I'm actually going to jump on the New Japan comment you just made, because okay. I'm not a New Japan completist. But that guy who did the round the islands move or whatever looks just scary and scary good. And I wonder if you've got some information that you can give me and everybody else about him, because he just, I mean, Jeff Cobb is Jeff Cobb, but that other guy, just that move was something else.
Hmm. Kelly, talk about him. Great O'Connor.
Well, Tour of the Islands is Jeff Cobb's move. Great O'Connor, he's wonderful. These guys are both in the United Empire group that is headed up by Will Ospreay. Okan, real name Tomoyuki Oka, he was a Young Lion recently. He is a recent graduate of the Young Lion system in New Japan, where guys just, they go out there, they lose every day. They go away to an excursion. His excursion was in the UK. And he was called the Great O'Karn. I don't know why it was O'Karn and then became O'Conn. That's what happened when he came over. He's finding his way as he actually was a mass. He was a very successful amateur wrestler, but he was not actually interested in pro wrestling as a kid. That is, he was a late bloomer to it. But yes, he went away, found his character. The character he was doing on his excursion is very, very similar to the one he played coming in, which isn't always true, but with him, it is. He has found his way. He's found this awesome balance between his ability to tell stories and be just kind of a bastard, but also whimsical. He is kind of a goof in there sometimes, every now and then, but also to wrestle a really, really great wrestling match. So he has continued to improve. The New Japan Young Lions system is great, but they don't always come in. I could give you a bunch more names, but people aren't going to know these names yet. I'll bring them up as they come up. But yes, Great Okan is the name that you need to know. It's the name JR needs to know. Then he can help you all. But he doesn't know it yet, obviously, because he said this other guy. But you are right. You are right to be excited about Okan, because I am increasingly excited about him every time I see him work.
Let me ask you this, Kelly. Would this have been the show that you had an ROH tag team title match and introduced Great Okan?
Oh, boy. That actually was my... believe me, I loved seeing Cobb and Okan yeah. on this show,
yeah.
but you've only got so much time. You had time for this. You had time for Dan Lambert, of all people, to speak, but you didn't have time for the Young Bucks to do anything. And like you said, there maybe there's a story there.
There's also House of Black and Death Triangle.
Oh, gosh. That didn't even really occur to me. Yeah, there was... There's time. Maybe the idea was we have them, they're on hand. There's travel schedule and logistics are probably hell right now. And so I get that.
Have the Bucks pre-record an interview 3 weeks ago, knowing knowing the crescendo of this storyline, and or have them send in a selfie video from wherever they are. I mean, you can't not have the Bucks talk about this match days before it happens. I mean, you just there's like, unless they're both like lost their voice, like and are in bed with a fever. Like but you have time for an ROH tag team title events and introducing new characters? I don't get it.
And Cobb and Okan could have ruined this match 30 seconds in instead of 10 minutes and 30 seconds in. And you tell the same story, and you don't make them look silly for waiting. Like, let's see if this match ends. You could have done this all in one very quick segment if you had to do it this week. But, yes, I would have waited till next week.
Yeah. All right. Nick, back to you.
Picking up on your Hangman Page and CM Punk, I, quite frankly, didn't understand a word that Hangman Page was saying. It was like, you're talking about who to what and what to who, where, what. And, you know, it's just all just for him to be kind of angry. And I think if there's anybody who can yell at the heavens about this pandemic we went through, it's Hangman, because he's never gotten back that hold my beer moment. And I know the crowd yells for him and stuff, but his heat just seems so tepid.
Yeah. I mean, I think I wrote the cover story of this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter on the disappointing title reign of Hangman Page. And it sounds crazy with some of the matches he's had, but he's had only a handful of matches. His character's been all over the place, but mostly not around. It's come across as if Tony Khan is bored with the Hangman character or doesn't know what to do with it, and Hangman's gone from, you know, excited new champion marking the beginning of a new era as an AEW original, so to speak, winning the title, and then we never really got a follow-up on any kind of, like, mission statement, and he was against wrestlers who people sort of liked, and Bryan Danielson especially, but even Dante. And I mean, it just never clicked. And tonight was, it just felt kind of random. Yeah, as did his promo a few weeks ago. You know, it's like, well, we want him to have a heel edge to him. Okay, can you do a better job establishing why and what it's based on? And I don't know. I just thought it was kind of shoddy, the booking of this. And I was hoping tonight would shut me up. You know, just like stop the criticism. Man, this all came to a crescendo. It all made sense. And it didn't. I've heard a number of people, seen a number of people say it feels like they missed 2 or 3 weeks of Dynamite that put all this in context. And it does feel like things got preempted and they just never got around to you know, catching us up.
Yeah, I think they had that was a month ago now, I think, where it was supposed to be Punk and Paige together, but Paige had COVID and so he couldn't make it. And then the following week, Punk was somewhere else, so it was just Paige out. So it like, They tried to cram 6 weeks of build up into 3 weeks, and just one thing is I look at, and I know wrestling is not boxing, you know, in the old days, but for this matchup, I thought it would have been so much better just to have them not try and build up this somewhat heel, somewhat face attitude, but just, you know, gladiators are going to go to fight, and you interview them, and you get their intensity separately, and then the fans will pick who they're going to pick, who they want to cheer. It's like Ali Frazier. You had 50% of the crowd was rooting for Frazier, 50% was rooting for Ali, and they had 3 great matches over their lifetime. You know, and I just thought this was too wrestling-y.
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up, Nick?
Just real quick on Chris Jericho. I think this I'm a wizard thing is just stupid, and he's got to, I mean, this, if this is going to be one of his last iterations of himself, he's got to really take a long, hard look in the mirror. And with that, I'll let you discuss that and talk to you later this week.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. I Jericho's coming across like somebody collecting a paycheck in TNA like a dozen years ago. You know, one of the, you know, ex-Nitro guys, you know, Booker or Nash or whoever, you know, was like, oh, yeah, we like a country club. Like, I mean, he got himself in great shape. And he's, I think he does still put thought into what he does. But there's just sort of a flippancy, like, I'm a wizard and I'm going to just throw fireballs. And I'm going to have fun with Angelo and Matt, who I just enjoy being around. And, like, I don't, my thing is, I think he's being entertaining. In his mind, he's being entertaining, genuinely. Like, it's a genuine effort. But I don't, he doesn't seem hungry to draw. Like, he's not, his mindset that I'm seeing isn't someone who's trying to help AEW succeed or grow. He's someone who's there to have fun and be entertaining and help his brand a little bit. And just have something to do when he shows up that makes him feel sort of engaged in again, kind of a more fun way than a let me figure out how to help this company make money way. That's my interpretation of what I'm seeing on the air. It doesn't mean that is his actual motivations, but the end product makes me think that. Kelly, how about you?
The feeling I get from him is that whoever's in charge of the segment, whoever's producing the segment, is saying, hey, it's Jericho, just turn him loose and let him do his thing. And there's almost nobody who needs more to be reined in and kind of – like, he knows what he's doing, but he will just make it a goof every time if you let him. And he will step too far over the line in terms of using shoot terms and things like that and kind of undercutting the business by kind of talking about using the business terms in promos. I just feel like he needs a director to kind of slap his wrist more than just about anybody because he's going too far, which is way better than somebody who can't go far enough because they just don't have the talent. But I feel like there's nobody there willing to tell the legend, hey, dial it back and kind of bring this into reality so we can indeed make money off one of our biggest investments.
All right, very good. Let's keep rolling through calls. You can get in on the conversation, 347-215-8558. We encourage first-time callers and infrequent callers to chime in, as always, along with our regulars. All right, let's go next to Derek in Utah. Derek, welcome. Good to hear from you again. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
The show was fun to watch. I do echo your guys' sentiments about the Paige and Punk promo. I thought the delivery was really good, but the content was somewhat baffling. So I think you guys have said enough about that. I won't beat the dead horse, but I felt the same way. What are they talking about? Like, what is the goal of this? But I think my
I will say, like, just because Punk tweeted in support of Sasha and Naomi, like, even if they're in the wrong, you don't like them, we have to support wrestlers every time blindly because of the history of the business. That was my take from it, which I didn't think was a super sophisticated take, nor was it when he said all politicians are to blame for what happened yesterday either. I think there's some blanket statements that are rooted in some passions and beliefs that he has that need a little more nuance. And it's just, he's felt kind of all over the place a little bit on some of this stuff. And this promo felt like, oh, let's pull from that. You know, let's say Punk says things, but then he's a hypocrite behind the scenes. And it's like, that's not the story of this world title feud. Like, Punk's tweets is like, you don't just introduce that because it's like, oh, it's meta and it'll feel more real. It's like, just tell me a good wrestling story. I've talked about this, but there's like already, but there's such a good wrestling story about Punk in his early 40s with the time off and what he went through and what he represents against a guy in his late 20s who's trying to create a legacy and who hasn't had this red hot title reign so far. And there's a way to talk about that in a way that doesn't, you know, just, you know, draw attention to something people aren't thinking about. But, you know, say, you know, Hangman just getting started and he hasn't really built a title reign that will be looked back on as special, but beating Punk will do that. That'll be a huge step towards that. And you have Punk talking about, I think I've still got it. I'm feeling good. And if I win, I think I can have this historically significant great title reign. There's so many opponents I'm looking forward to, but I got to beat this young guy, Hangman Page, and I don't know if I can. Like, it's just let the two baby faces talk about their real story and the contrast of it and speak from the heart and drop this meta Twitter stuff and, oh, behind the scenes, you're not this. Leave that to MJF. He does it better. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you, Derek.
And I agree with it in this way, too, is, you know, I don't live on Twitter, and you've mentioned a lot, like, sometimes the Clubhouse stuff where you feel like because you're not, you know, sitting and looking at a computer all day that this isn't for me. Like, this isn't meant for me. Yeah. You know, and sometimes I do kind of feel like that way. I mean, I'm a 36-year-old dude who's got a full-time job. I watch wrestling at the end of the day kind of to be immersed in a wrestling story, not what's going on outside that doesn't really have to do with the feud at hand. And that is like an auxiliary point that doesn't have to do with the most prized possession in AEW at all. You know, so I feel the same way. And I think my other kind of feeling with the AEW shows, and I enjoy almost every week because the wrestling's good, but I feel it's just bloated. And the fact that the show's bloated in and of itself, that's sometimes not a problem, but now there's a pay-per-view, and I look at a lot of the matches on the pay-per-view, and it's kind of like by adding the matches, it subtracts my interest from the card. Like Jade and Anna Jay, where did that come from? And why is it on the pay-per-view? Obviously, Death Triangle versus the House of Black, they haven't focused on it at all. It's been Rampage exclusive. Then why is it on the pay-per-view? And they kind of plug these two tournaments in all of a sudden and tried to make them important. But if you consider those tournaments really important with the prize at the end, then it takes away from the other matches. And if you don't, then why is it on the pay-per-view, especially two tournaments, both culminating at the pay-per-view? And so I look at it like this card and I'm like, okay, that's a good match. That's a good match. But I feel like, man, if I see 12 or 13 pretty good matches or great matches, it is subtraction and it doesn't feel as special and notable. And so I just kind of felt that, and then I echo your guys' sentiments as well about the New Japan guys running in today. That's great to kick off the, you know, the build to their New Japan versus AEW pay-per-view, but I don't know why you did it tonight. I don't know why. Yeah, and I will have to, and I'll leave you guys with this, I do have to disagree with Kelly strongly about the great O'Conn. I think he's awful. I mean, he looks like a chubby dude who shouldn't be – wearing underwear, first of all. And then his offense, I just think, is
– He was chubby.
That's not a –
But that's what he looked like when he was a real wrestler. That's what he looked like when he was like, actually winning national championships.
He should commit himself to his job and look better in his underwear. But also, I think his offense, just as from a wrestling perspective, I despise his offense. The Mongolian chops look just as bad as Tenzan's, and the claw I think is a bad finisher, and I don't think he sells or moves with grace. And so, man, if as excited I am to see a lot of New Japan guys, the fact that he showed up was a little bit disheartening to me tonight.
All right, Derek, I appreciate the call.
Yeah, it's always good talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Sorry, I haven't been calling in for a while, but now that school's over, finished up my master's degree, I don't have to go to bed at 8:30 anymore.
What's your master's degree?
Education. I'm a high school teacher, so instructional design, I guess, is what I am now.
Well, congratulations. Appreciate that.
Well, thanks, guys, and you guys have a great night.
Yep, you too. We'll look forward to hearing more from you. Kelly, anything you want to say to defend the great O'Conn?
My defense is that he's getting insanely good responses. The American crowds are eating him up. And they've been excited to see him, which surprised me because he does not work a style that I would have thought would be eaten up by American crowds. But when he's worked on New Japan Strong, and granted, those going to New Japan Strong are probably at least somewhat knowledgeable about his work. They're more likely to be than the average indie viewer. I was stunned at the reaction for him, and I think he was stunned at the reaction for him because he seemed to be genuinely tickled by the fact that people were really cheering for him and chanting his name and things like that. He is a completely different kind of wrestler. He is not your AEW darling at all, and I think that's fine. He does have some moves in his moveset that don't excite me either. And they were just covered. But as a personality, I just love what he does. And I love that he provides something different in the New Japan context. But I will say, and almost said before, he's not for everyone. And I totally understand that. And I actually don't begrudge him this point at all. As far as the diminishing returns for very large amounts of matches on these and stories trying to be told, I keep going back to my head that AEW seems to – it's this show that has 2 hours, but it feels like it needs to be 4 hours to tell its story. Meanwhile, Raw is 3 hours long and feels like it's got to be about an hour and a half long to tell its story. It's just –
There's a nice middle ground out there for somebody to seize.
Yeah. It just roster size. We talked months ago, you and I did, in person about, like, is Tony going to sign too many guys? And I think we both saw it coming. And that's where so much of the bloat comes from. Also, absolutely, running two tournaments concurrently on a show that doesn't do short matches. Like WWE would just have a lot of these earlier round matches go 3-4 minutes, but AEW doesn't do that. So that eats up a lot of time that could have been used for storytelling. I'm sure internally people are blaming the lack of hype on a lot of different things, but putting that much time into tournament matches really does stick out as something that probably is eating into valuable storytelling.
All right, let's keep rolling through calls here, and we'll go to Larry in Beardstown, Illinois next. Larry, good to hear from you again. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought Dynamite overall was a solid show. The three-way with Jungle Boy and Swerve and Ricky Starks was kind of a little bit of a train wreck, but a good train wreck. A lot of Ricky Starks is $1 million, I'm telling you. They could really do something with him if they use him right, I think, over about the next year or so. And, well, something non-Dynamite related real quick. I saw on the PW Torch site where I guess Wardlow gave an interview to CBS Sports and kind of described himself or described him, his character as a cross between, if I read it right, John Wick, James Bond, and Ric Flair. Did I read that right?
Yeah. Yep.
That to me proves that Tony Khan needs to institute a no drinking alcohol policy before anybody does a radio show. I like Wardlow, but no. Ric Flair, no. Just no. And, I mean, like I said, other than that, I like Wardlow. The crowd really likes Wardlow. And I want to say that, you know, tonight's show, the three-way was good. Is it safe to say that they're starting the kind of build now for the New Japan AEW combined show with the United Empire guys coming in tonight?
Maybe. Or if they didn't have a pay-per-view, maybe they would have done that anyway. I mean, there's so much going on in AEW and such a lack of focus and even coherence in terms of the pacing and the context and the cadence of the booking and the presentation of talent. Who knows when we see Johnny Elite again, you know? I mean, like, just people come and they go, there's storylines, and then 3 weeks goes by, and if you're only watching Dynamite, nothing gets mentioned. So I don't know. You know, we have ROH. No context has been given to Dynamite viewers who live in the Dynamite universe. What the future of ROH is and why these belts are suddenly being recognized by AEW. But there's title matches with tag teams that crowds buying tickets pop for because they know the history. But AEW Dynamite is just for them because we're not going to tell you other than a little thing here and there from Excalibur why people are popping for them. So who knows? You know, who knows? I don't think Tony Khan steps back and looks at the big picture and thinks, okay, I got these people buying tickets going, holy shit, when they see these New Japan guys show up. But I know there's a huge number, a second million of fans who want to watch a product different than WWE, but they have to feel like it's for them and not something that they're confused by or it's not meant for them or they're too late to the party, as Jason Powell often says. So, yeah, it's frustrating. Because so many pieces are there, and there's so many things AEW does well, and I look forward to watching them every week, and I enjoy every hour of AEW I watch. But the eye on that I have whenever I watch any wrestling on is this, and I hate that the authority ruined this phrase because I've been using it for a lot longer than they were, long before they were. But what's best for business? And I see AEW doing a ton of things that feel short attention span, scattershot. Instant gratification, but not what's best for business, not what's disciplined, not what's mature and well thought out. And so you ask that question and it gets a little rant out of me because I get frustrated by this slice of AEW that kind of culminates right before a pay-per-view like this. But who knows if that was intended to do that or not? You know, I mean, Kelly, I assume that's a safe – it should be a safe assumption, but we might not see them again. And maybe it's something having to do more with ROH than the combined New Japan show.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's easy to use the heavyweights because in Japan right now there's a junior heavyweight tournament going on, and they're the only ones on the tour. None of the heavyweights are on this particular tour. So for anyone to show up, it's going to be some of the heavyweight guys. But I, too, didn't get any strong feeling. I would hope they don't do this as poorly as WCW did once when it was the big WCW versus I don't remember if it was New Japan or All Japan, but they had they dedicated a Starcade to it, and then they didn't do anything with it on TV. Nothing. They just said what the matches were and didn't introduce, I want to say, anybody on TV. And so they're already one step up on WCW, which, you know, low-hanging fruit there. But it just seems like I too, didn't get the sense that we for sure were going to see Cobb and O'Conn again. They're a regular tag team. That's what they're doing with these guys. They're in the heavyweight tag team championship scene over there. So I assume they're going to tangle with these guys, but I don't know. I don't know if I have that trust. And even if that's the plan, I don't know if they're going to find the time to make that work, because they have to, this is going to be a really critical time, because they have to introduce a lot of characters in a very short amount of time. And that's already what they've been doing. And we've already been criticizing.
Yeah. You can't promote, and WCW tried to do this, let's present dream matches, you know, but you, if you don't provide a context for the people for whom they are not a dream match, you're isolating yourself to the most hardcore of hardcore fans. And that number, I think, is bigger now than it was back in 95. And that's why AEW sold out as quickly as it did in Chicago for this show. But there's still so many more fans that they could be bringing in and making it more easy and doing a better job even for the fans who are into this by giving them a story. Like, a dream match can actually be enhanced through good booking and good promos and context and storyline. And AEW just, I don't want them to be content just saying, you know, well, a certain subset of the larger fan base sees this already as a dream match. Let's just cater to them. Broaden that out and enhance their investment in it. And I just don't think they have the instincts for that. Larry, anything else?
Larry, I think maybe you guys might agree with it. And watch the Britt Baker Tony Storm match, and I don't know if it was just me, but they seemed like they were just a little off, a little clunky the entire match. Like, they just weren't quite on the same page. I want to know what you guys thought of that.
I want a bigger body of work before I blame Tony Storm for it, but I'm not as in on Britt Baker being this franchise centerpiece in the ring and to a lesser degree, but also on the microphone as it seems as the general almost consensus view of her. I thought it was clunky, and I you know, Britt Baker's got the super slow-mo super kick that, you know, I just don't think she should do a move she does so poorly. I said that 3 years ago. I'll say it today. But, you know, Toni Storm and WWE, for all the heat WWE gets for how they treated her, and boy, do they deserve it in a lot of ways, Toni didn't bring the best version of Toni Storm to the ring during those final months either. You know, she was slow. She was not at her most fit and best in terms of the execution of the moves. And so I'm, as people will hear, and by the way, I should plug this, on the Blue Logo Show, Rich Fan and I did a one-hour preview of Double or Nothing. We recorded it before tonight's Dynamite, but there's not much to update, unfortunately, about our criticism of the hype for that show. But I advocated for Toni Storm winning the Owen tournament, and so I'm a fan of hers, and I think they should invest in her. But Kelly, I'm not convinced yet that, you know, I think she's the best of the options that they have that haven't been defined down, but I'm not ready to celebrate her as just really being great as I think people perceive her at her best in the past. I think she can get there. Britt, I just think, sort of hits a ceiling athletically, and she's more character-based, and I think she gets exposed sometimes against certain wrestlers, and there's a clunkiness. And there were moments of that tonight that, as I was watching it, reminded me of why Britt isn't in the top tier of female workers. I think you can make money with her, and I think she can be in main events, but let's not confuse that with being in the top tier of workers. Your thoughts, Kelly?
I hate to say it, but I expected clunkiness here because neither one of these two has ever had a particularly great one-on-one match. I've seen a lot of Toni Storm matches. I saw her entire body of work in NXT, and she was never really all that. Like, she's got an inherent likability that kind of works, but the character's not really defined. It was very busy. Like, she was covered in markings, and there's so much going on with the gear. It's just stuff all being thrown at the wall, but there was no real definition to what she had going on. And she really never had a bunch of great matches. I had no point in the company was she having these bangers, just match after match after match. And she was clunky on a pretty regular basis in NXT. That said, I thought she was the best available to win the tournament as well, just because of the same reason Wade said. She's not defined down, and she – you might as well see what you can get out of her while you can. Maybe this is a reclamation project for Ruby. I'm not sure if that's what this is or not, but at any rate, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't expecting big things out of this match, even though I really, really, really wanted to be surprised.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Larry, anything else you want to add?
A couple of quick things. First, I think it was a good show of class by AEW and the announce team to mention what that coward did down in Texas the other day, the Texas school shooting and everything. I thought that was a really classy move on the part of AEW and the announcers to, you know, express their condolences, and that was a class move, I think. And wanted to let you know, here in Illinois,
like,
unfortunately...
Larry, I was surprised. It felt like Ross took the lead on that. And, like, he felt really, like, emotionally... Invest sounds right. Like, bothered, you know, as we all are. But, like, he showed it. You know, a lot of people think, oh, I just want to escape in wrestling. And I'm cognizant of that, too. I mean, sometimes I feel like, should we really be, you know, talking about Britt Baker's slow super kicks when these horrible things are happening in the world, and what Russia's doing to the to Ukraine. And, you know, it's like, yeah,
right.
But, you know, we've got our escape from that. But I thought this was appropriate. I think when there's 19 elementary school kids, you know, just brutally shot with a 18-year-old who on a whim with a weapons that an 18-year-old shouldn't have access to through mail order and be able to fire that many bullets. And I mean, the Second Amendment did not imagine weapons like this. You know, it's just like, and I know, you know, so for Ross to like introduce that and how we're all feeling, you know, emotionally in different ways, but no matter how you feel about you know, what laws should be enacted and how effective they would be. It's awful. And I am glad you brought that up, and I'm glad Ross brought it up. I didn't really get a sense of Excalibur because we can't see his face and he didn't say anything. And Shivani just sort of threw a little platitude out there that didn't do a lot. But I want to just especially thank Ross for that. I thought, I think people are thinking about that today, and it felt like Ross was the leader of AEW, the voice of AEW, and, you know, reminding us that they're aware of these things going on. Kelly, what'd you think of that? Then I'll throw back.
I also was, he easily could have stepped into a big pile of something if he had continued on and gotten real specific with what he thinks his solution should be. I thought, this, as a wrestling show, did probably about as well as it could with a situation with so much more gravity than professional wrestling will ever have. I think that he very, very wisely stayed within the confines of what needs to be said on the show, while also showing, as he absolutely did, that this is really, really under his skin. Just like, and that's, you know, his job is to be the voice of the people, and never was that more apparent than in that moment.
Yeah. All right, Larry, sorry for interrupting, but I didn't want that to go by without saluting Ross for doing something that, as Kelly points out, is you know, dangerous territory to walk in during an entertainment show.
Well, I agree with you guys, and I thought it was good that they did it, and I wanted to say that unfortunately, you know, the AEW Double or Nothing is going to be in a lot of different movie theaters, you know, like the AMC chain and Cinemark, and a few others are going to be running it in some of their theaters. And unfortunately, the closest one to me is about an hour and a half away. But I can tell you by searching through some of the Illinois theaters that most of them are very, very close to being sold out for the Double or Nothing showing.
Wow.
So that's kind of a positive note. I think if that continues, if that's a trend over all the different theaters and all the different states, that's something that AEW can really point to and And that would be really good publicity for them. Hey, we got these numbers from the AMC and got numbers from the leading motion picture chains in America and you know, these big numbers and this big turnout and things like that. I think that would be a good shot of PR for the company.
I think AW, this is not a booking thing. This is a production thing. And I think they come up way short of what I think a better visionary would have production-wise for the product that they have and the fan base that they have. I think they're settling for what they could be, you know, for as opposed to being what they could be. And going to a theater that you know is sold out, Kelly, sending a couple camera guys to a couple different theaters in a couple different parts of the country and showing them entering, standing in the lobby, interviewing a couple of them, showing them reacting on the big screen can help take the theater viewing experience of a pay-per-view to the next level. And I don't know why they're doing it. I know Tony's got, you know, companies he's buying and talent he's hiring and multi-sports he's managing and social media to monitor and interviews to do, you know, all the traditional stuff that he does. But I think the budget's there and the idea should be there to capture more visually the passion that the core fan base that the sizable core fan base that AW has and convey that on television. I think they should be doing that at arenas every week too. You know, every sporting event I watch on network television shows fans entering the building, staying in the ticket lobby, walking around the concourse at halftime or between periods. Like it brings you to the building. And AW is unbelievably unimaginative when it comes to how they present their product. And I from the early weeks of Dynamite, I was like more elbow grease, more pizzazz. More production. It's point a camera at the ring and let the wrestlers do their thing. And I'm frustrated because in my mind, it could be so much more. And I think it would help grow the product. And Larry bringing up the atmosphere at theaters is another good idea. And I just don't sense Tony has idea people around him. He doesn't welcome it or he doesn't act on it because it feels like a stagnant production that should be better. I'm not saying it's a huge difference maker, but you want to do a bunch of little things that aren't huge difference makers just to make the product artistically better and make it seem like it's something that's more exciting to be part of. And it's something WWE really focuses on, even though there's a lot of things that they do that are repetitive and, you know, the shaking camera and whatever, but the, you know, what they do for WrestleMania, what they do for these stadium shows. And you can see them trying new things, even if we laugh at 3 out of 4 of them. And that's just not happening in AEW. Kelly, talk about the theater experience.
So I went to Revolution at the theater that is local to Wade and I. And it's amazing that there weren't more people there, but it also, I'm a massive, massive wrestling fan. And I go to a lot of movies and targeting somehow missed me. So there is a lack of knowledge out there, I think, being given to people that really, really would want to use it, that there's another way to see these shows. I believe tickets were $20 or $25 to this thing. Had blocks down the road for me. And I found out at kind of the last minute that this even was happening. And there were, I don't know, there were about 15 of us there. This was nowhere near a sellout, but I don't think that a lot of people knew about it. And I had to look it up this time too. I didn't even get either from Imagine Cinemas or from AEW saying, hey, you went to the last one. Can we assume you're good to go for the next one? Like, I didn't get that email. I had to go looking for it just today, actually, to see that they are indeed doing this again, despite the lower turnout of the last one locally. At any rate, it's great to hear these are being sold out in the big markets because we're in a Twin Cities suburb. Like, we're not in the thick of it here. So I'm not expecting sellouts to pro wrestling shows necessarily, but I wonder if that could happen if they just – you only need a 30-second or a 1-minute segment on this on the show saying, hey, Imagine Cinemas all over the country. You can go see this show with a bunch of like-minded people. And because it was even with a pretty small crowd, it was fairly raucous. It felt like being at a wrestling show just with way too few people.
Yeah, I think that and a few other things would have been more productive than the ROH tag title match on tonight's show. There was plenty of other content on the show to keep people tuned in, and they should be doing a better job letting people know about that. Larry, anything else?
No, I think that'll do it. You've got a bunch of callers on hold, I'm sure, and
yep,
want to get those callers in without a doubt. So I'll just say maybe until next week, so long from the land of Lincoln.
Thank you, Larry. All right, we'll go next to area code 781. 781, go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Brian Boston, how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, Brian. What's on your mind?
Just to kind of echo the last point you made about the ROH title match, we didn't need to see Roppongi Vice on Dynamite. That was, no one cares about them. I mean, that was just unnecessary. They could have done without that. And the Moxley Kingston match versus Private Party, that was kind of thrown together at the last second. When I saw Tony Khan, and when I saw that match had been added on Twitter, I'm like, oh, come on, don't do that. You're just making it harder for your timing, for the production of the show and the timing, you know, trying to fit in too much at once. That being said, I actually thought they timed the show pretty well tonight, all things considered, because they gave the main event a decent amount of time. All in all, some things could have been better, but it seems like they cleaned up a little bit in terms of allowing the main event a good amount of time. But I guess I'll hit the women's thing first, since that's usually what I talk about. I admit I was a little disappointed that Toni Storm lost, but as far as booking goes, that's pretty much the best finish you could ask for. I mean, Baker wins, you know, being a heel and hotly contested match, and you know, Storm doesn't look too bad because they had Baker cheat with the ropes and a roll up to beat her, so she doesn't suffer too much from it. I just think it's one of those times where maybe you could have used a count out or a DQ finish in a match like this, because you don't want to have Storm lose so quickly into a run, and you know, you don't want Baker to lose, you know, shortly after losing the title. So I'm just kind of wondering what you guys' thoughts were on that match.
It was a weird semifinal to book. And I think, you know, this is, again, I'll just harp on it. I'll admit I'm harping on it. Why is that ROH taking title match on the show and not a promo from Britt Baker and Toni Storm and
exactly.
More context given to this match? You know, we human beings need context and time to get fully revved up emotionally into something, you know, unless it's try to avoid, you know, a deer on a road, you know, where you're like, oh, throw it out of the way. You get that adrenaline rush. It's like, we want stories and we want to hear from people. And it's frustrating. So I don't think this should have been the semifinal if Britt Baker was going to be Toni Storm. I think that defines Toni Storm down. I would, you know, usually the, you know, you say, oh, that you want the babyface to be in the chase, the money's in the chase. But here you want to establish that Toni Storm is for real, and having her lose, even if you put the little asterisk next to it with, you know, shenanigans with Jamie Hayter, it feels like, oh, they're still in the Britt Baker business, and Toni Storm is there to be, you know, to be not stepped on, but like, you know, knocked over on her way to win a tournament. And Baker doesn't need to win this tournament. And I don't think Ruby Soho and Chris Statlander are better options than Toni Storm to win this tournament. Toni wins this tournament. That's something you can talk about with her going forward to establish her. And I'll wait to see how it plays out. Yeah.
This is why I think a DQ or count-out finish would have been better. I know they don't like to do that, but it would have worked in this situation because, I mean, you know, you don't want either woman to lose. That's the thing because, you know, Baker just came off a big loss to Thunder Rosa, and she had already been beaten by Storm in a tag match. So I think this is one of those situations where a non-finish like a DQ or a count-out and one person can win that way would have been the way to go.
Yeah. I agree. What else, Brian?
I really like the finish of the Kyle O'Reilly Samoa Joe match. That was interesting because instead of just going, you know, for the staple muscle buster, they actually had, you know, it was kind of a 50-50 thing at the end with O'Reilly going for the armbar and Joe using the coquina clutch or a modified version of it in this case with one arm instead of both. And, you know, they just kept going at it until eventually O'Reilly passed out. I think that was a good way to book it. So I wonder what your guys' thoughts were on that.
Yeah, Kelly, what'd you think? Joe and O'Reilly, I mean, that is a fun match on paper. I think Baker and Tony should have gotten the headline spot on the show, but I'm not upset that Joe and O'Reilly got the spot. I just would have gone, I would have flipped those or opened with Joe O'Reilly. But yeah, what'd you think of that match and also just specifically Brian's bringing up in terms of the finish?
Yeah, I felt sure that the women should be in the main event spot, and I felt just as sure in the fact that they wouldn't, that they wouldn't get it. I like any unconventional finish when, especially in bigger matches like this. I mean, bigger, you can argue that, but I like the occasional the babyface. Especially has to get a little bit more crafty to win a match. So I was on board with that. With the women, as far as the finish, it seems like tournaments are where long-term storyline plans go to die. You can get away with countouts and disqualifications to a point. Like, I wouldn't want to see another Tatanka situation where he was undefeated on TV for 14 months, but they didn't want to actually put him over like the top seven or eight heels. So he had to beat him or the King of the Ring where he had to go time limit draw with Lex Luger because they couldn't have either guy lose that. You can get away with that. What's so interesting about this particular match is that it seemed absolutely prime for that finish. Because you could have Hayter drag her out and do something to her there. It seems to me like this is all built to get Britt to turn face and away from her two running buddies. They set some of that in motion, if that's what's happening. But you could do the exact same thing with the count out finish that you're talking about. And I think they get away with that just as well. And the fact that they say they don't want to do countouts is the only reason they didn't do this countout.
Which is kind of a stupid reason, to be honest, because, you know, countouts can be good if they're used, you know, sparingly and not done to death like WWE does them.
Yep.
Yep. Totally. There's many good things there's some things AEW shouldn't be doing because WWE runs them into the ground, and there's other things they should be doing and to show how they can be done without running them into the ground. And I think they get that backwards sometimes.
I also wonder how much of this is due to the fact that Tony Khan's just trying to do too much by himself because, you know, he's got the Jaguars thing going. He's got his own analytics company. He's got that Fulham soccer club. He's got AEW. I mean, I think he's just trying to do too much and he's going to burn himself out. And I wonder if, you know, if he delegated a little bit, just let somebody help you. You know, you got guys around you like William Regal and stuff who can help. Just, you know, just delegate a little bit. And I think if he did that, you know, storylines would get better, you know, and bookings like what happened with Storm and Baker might be a bit better. I just think some of this stuff falls through the cracks because he's trying to do too much.
I get that sense. I would love to see an AEW Dynamite on a weekly basis. That's the product of Tony Khan being completely focused on that and having some rest and recovery time to recharge as opposed to all the other things you listed that he's part of. And I'd like to see an AEW product where I feel like there's two or three people who he's able to lean on more for help. And you know, when the book is written about AEW, I am curious about not just the falling out Cody had with the other EVPs, but the initial, you know, with the Bucks, you know, I mean, what?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was supposed to be this collaborative effort, a dream team, different ideas. And it feels like, you know, I don't know. I just feel like there's a story to be told about how this is playing out, and we are on the three-year anniversary, and we're 2.5 years into Tony booking Dynamite, and bookers get burned out, and
yeah.
It's important to pace yourselves, and I don't know that Tony's doing that.
And I also think that he's going to be forced to do that at some point, you know, because even his willpower can only last for so long. Eventually, he's going to reach a breaking point. So I think he's going to do it eventually. It, you know, it's just a matter of when. And let's be honest, the Jaguars suck. They've always sucked. I mean, the best they ever did was the NFC title game against the Patriots a few years ago, and they choked that one away. To me, it's like if you're going to focus your priorities – screw the Jaguars, hire somebody else to do your own duties, ignore the Jaguars, they suck, and just focus on AEW.
Well, I come from Minnesota. I don't want to think sports teams that do poorly have no chance to ever get better.
The Vikings have a much better history in the NFL than the Jaguars.
Well, that is true. All right, Brian, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Sure thing. Have a good one.
Yep, you too. Kelly, anything you want to add to any of that?
I feel the same pain as you. How do we pass through Minnesota sports on all these? Just makes us sad. I don't know that there was anything else there.
That's fine. Yep. All right. Our number is 347-215-8558. It's never too late to chime in and call and push one on your keypad after calling if you want to join the conversation. If there's something we've said that you disagree with or want to add to or augment or a topic we're afraid we're not going to cover, consider yourself invited to call and push one. Up next is Craig in Toledo, Ohio. Craig, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
I totally disagree with you guys about the Hangman and Punk promo tonight. I liked it because I think he's channeling the criticism he's gotten from everybody about his title reign and focusing it on Punk. I wasn't interested at all in Paige and Punk at all, but when he fired up over the past couple weeks, I've really enjoyed it.
Let me ask you this, Craig. Who on Dynamite has said anything bad about Hangman Page's title reign that justifies that being the central hook of a pay-per-view main event men's world title match storyline?
Nobody on Dynamite and Rampage, but we're talking
Bingo.
About the hardcore audience.
Like, which they're going to buy the pay-per-view anyway. They are. Like, this is about...
But now they're
about,
more... Okay.
I mean, you want a coherent storyline that isn't based upon something that isn't... And this is where Cody Rhodes was right. Shoulder content or... And actually, Cody does meta stuff all the time, so I can't use him as the beacon here. But tell a story between the opening and closing credits, so to speak, of whatever show you're doing. Like... And what you're doing is, and I'm glad you're doing this, and I'm going to push back, and you push back on me. I don't want to try to, like, step on your point, but I want to push back on it in the sense that you're sort of proving my point. If you enjoyed it because you're aware of something and it's for the hardcore fans, I'll stipulate to all that. My argument is AEW ought to think bigger than that. It's that second million. They've added – Bryan Danielson and CM Punk and Aleister Black and Keith Lee and Adam Cole and on, and their viewership isn't that much above where it was 2 years ago. It's way above last year, but it's the middle of the pandemic. But their growth isn't, and I wrote a cover story on this a couple months ago in the Prosing Torch newsletter, their growth isn't that impressive when you consider the talent that they've added and the amount of time that they've been around. And I think storylines like this are one of the reasons why. I think they're in a bubble. And I think there's a bunch of enablers who push back on my criticism and Jason Powell's criticism and others, including people who call the show and email it, who share similar views. They're not feeling inclusive of fans who aren't New Japan completists or people who are on Twitter and following the criticism of Hangman Page on podcasts or whatever. It's like, if you play to that audience, you're limiting yourself. Okay, Craig, sorry, go ahead.
I just think that it's important to grow your initial fan base. And the initial fan base wasn't hyped for this match. And I think that they might be, I was hyped for that promo for the back
and
forth.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
So,
yeah.
Like, building your initial fan base, I've always disagreed with you on the growing the second million thing. Just, you know, off the bat, you gotta, like, kind of grassroots, grow that initial fan base. And I'm that initial fan base, so.
All right, so you were not going to order the pay-per-view, but tonight's Hangman Punk promo convinced you to do it, or you probably were anyway, but you're just more excited about it?
Well, money's a problem for me, but I was going to order it simply for the MJF Wardlow match. I don't have any interest in anything else on the card, but now I have interest in that match, in the Page Punk match.
Can we have both? Can what you liked about Hangman Punk tonight exist, but in a way that doesn't exclude a bunch of people who aren't aware of the foundation of what made this work for you? Because this is not a zero-sum game. It's not, well, the more you appeal to the second million, the less you're going to appeal to the first million. No, this is not a zero-sum game where for every 100,000 you gain above a million, there's going to be 100,000 disgruntled core, hardcore grassroots fans. I think the grassroots fans will enjoy the product more if the product is also appealing to a second million, because by definition, you're not giving up anything. You're just doing a more coherent, organized job of becoming accessible from a information, from a backstory, from an emotional investment standpoint, by just doing a better job. I think if you appeal to the second million, you're not excluding anything. In fact, I think you're enhancing the product for that grassroots initial million.
I mean, I understand your point, and I agree for the most part, but a lot of people get off on AEW because it's their thing. They're the band that you saw in the club, you know, and you build that up until they're Boston or Aerosmith or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So Craig, tell me what, and I want to get Kelly's thoughts on this. Explain to listeners of this show who watch Dynamite, they listen to our post show, but they don't really know what you're talking about when you say they're playing off of the criticism of Hangman Page's title reign. What is that, and how did this promo do that?
No, I think that he's channeling that criticism that we've all heard on, like, podcasts and things like that, and Twitter and whatever, and, you know, the tea leaves, if you were. And he's channeling that into aggression versus Punk. He's being a dick because he's feeling hurt by all that criticism. So that's what I'm thinking. And it's kind of nuanced, but I don't know if it makes any sense to anybody else, but that's what I thought when I heard him talk.
Yeah. So Kelly, I want to get your thoughts on what Craig's had to say here.
So I see all of the same things that Craig and that you are seeing in terms of the content of the promo, but I can't turn off that part of me that wonder, for instance, when he said the line about labor, you're talking about labor. I had two immediate thoughts, and thought one was, hey, that's about the Sasha tweet. And thought two was, they've never mentioned that on the show. And most people are too smart to live on Twitter like I do. And
Kelly, can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
I haven't seen this Sasha tweet.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
even know what that is.
Okay. So yeah, when he was talking about the labor thing, that it was about CM Punk talking about having to basically be in solidarity with the worker, to be on Sasha and Naomi's side in their issue against the WWE.
Okay.
But in the context of him saying that on the show, I just wonder how many people missed that. And that happened with a lot of what he said today, where it hit me because I'm very, very dialed in to pro wrestling. But even if I was dialed into the show, just the show and not Twitter and not the sheets and places like that, it seems like there would have been a lot missed. I actually thought there was a lot to like in that segment. But I just think there are a lot of lessons to learn from WCW, which really, really at the end did a lot of this meta stuff, and brought in a lot of things that were just kind of hinted at that weren't actually, that didn't happen on the show. And it didn't seem like it did them any favors.
He replied last week to Matt Cardona saying, if I could go back in time the night I was pushed off the stage in a wheelchair on Raw, I should have walked into Johnny Ace's office, placed my neck brace on the table, and walked out because I wasn't being respected enough as internet champion. I still wasn't sure if that was a punchline or sincere. Still not to this day. But if you go back, and then Punk responded and said, if you go back in time and stand up for yourself, you should stand up for the workers now. So that was last week. And then he said this weekend, it doesn't matter if your opinion of your coworkers is positive or negative. Stand with them because they'll do the same thing to you and you'll wish someone helped. Trust me, you're expendable. Together, you're unstoppable. And there was another tweet I don't see on his feed right now initially about Sasha. I don't know if he took it down or it was in a reply mode or something, or a quote tweet or something, but about that too. So again, you know, it feels a bit obscure to build a pay-per-view promo around a tweet that not only a lot of people aren't aware of, it wasn't something in your company, it's not storyline based, it's more CM Punk or Phil Brooks on social media, which is a crossover, but it's different than the wrestling character. And besides that, we don't even know what Hangman means about Punk being a hypocrite behind the scenes when the cameras aren't on. Are we now getting into a Cody zone where, well, Punk acts like a leader on air, but he's not really behind the scenes? Like, what does that even mean? I don't know what that means. And so, and I just don't think you can introduce that and then expect a unified emotional response. And whatever you put on your show, you want to have this concert of the viewers in concert reacting a certain way because you've given them the foundation to react a certain way. And that just felt like, let's score points with the internet by saying an OMG, oh, holy shit, insider reference that in the end falls flat because there's no context for it because we don't know what he means about Punk behind the scenes. Craig, I sit here and invite people to, you know, disagree with us, and then we just like, are at you. But I appreciate your point of view, and I'm learning from it, even if I'm not, you know, swayed in my larger view of that promo. Go ahead with any follow-up or anything else you want to bring up. Yeah.
The other thing the Paige, or not Paige. Now my mind's on Paige. the Samoa Joe and Kyle O'Reilly match.
Adam
you guys. Oh, was it? No, it was.
Oh, I threw in Kyle O'Reilly or Adam Cole. I didn't know if you're talking about the match that happened or the match coming up, so I just threw both names towards you.
No, the match that happened. They've been doing, you guys, especially on the Fix, I think, have been talking about, like, things that WWE does a lot that AEW needs to steer clear from, like distraction finishes and whatnot. But AEW, one of the things I hate about the show is that they always do that WWE thing where they go out of the ring and then, you know, Excalibur gets his voice all up and says, oh, we got to go to break. And it happens, like, all the time to go to break, like, in the middle of a match. But the Joe O'Reilly match didn't do that tonight, and I really enjoyed that. And that was my thought. So thanks for taking
cool.
my
yeah,
call, guys.
absolutely. Thanks, Craig. Appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. Call again. Yeah. Kelly, any thoughts on that particular point Craig brought up?
Oh, I've talked on a lot of podcasts about the evil and is it a necessary evil of having matches that go over breaks. What I can't stand are 7-minute matches with 3-minute, 40-second commercials in the middle. And then they go to, and you know, they go to split screen and they tell you to stay tuned for that, but the workers still kind of treat it like a break. So there's really no reason to watch it. I mean, we sat together watching Dark and Rampage, and we both knew where those split screen moments were the whole time. So that's kind of unfortunate. In terms of, hey, this is a real competition, it is very silly to throw to a commercial. I understand why it's done, but it's very silly. I've always wondered, would it be beneficial or would it just really piss people off if one time they ended a match during the commercial and they said
they did that, I think, once for Orange Cassidy, probably like a year or so ago. I think they ought to, because then people would be more likely to, pay attention during commercial. If I'm an advertiser, I guess I kind of want that, so people really are paying attention. I mean, yeah, a 7-minute match with commercial in the middle with split screen is better than a 7-minute match with 3.5 minute commercial without split screen. I know Tony's got his formula, and WWE has their formula, and they're very different, and they have different rationale for doing it. But there's something to be said for there being a little too much on Dynamite and not really things having a chance to breathe, not having things have a chance to ramp up and ramp down. I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of Dynamite ending with a wrestler celebrating a big win and they pivot immediately, whether it's a successful title defense or a title change or a tournament match like tonight, where it shifts to, here's a bunch of things on the screen that are coming up next, or here's us rattling off a bunch of things to think about. I don't think people can take all that information in. And I think you're better off emphasizing the main event you just watched really matters. And that's what we're closing the show with. Or, and someone brought this up recently, give all the attention the match and the celebration of the win deserves, or the agony of defeat for the loser, and then go to the announcers for 45 seconds on camera and have them and put some graphics on the screen and make the graphics dynamic and interesting, not staid and boring, and have them cover some other territory, but not with the wrestler in the background where you're kind of moving quickly away from it. I think you condition people to have that super short attention span, social media era, focus or lack of focus. And I think it ultimately is counterproductive. It feels a little desperate sometimes.
Yeah, and they got Excalibur out there throwing out so many pieces of information at once that it actually is becoming like a comical meme, like the amount of stuff he's spitting out at the end of the show. And one of my favorite Vince quotes, among all the genuinely crazy things he said, is if you tell them everything, they won't remember anything. And that's, it's that simple.
I said it forever. I heard decades ago, Kevin Dunn said, we want people to remember 2.5 things at the end of our TV shows. 2.5 things. Everything else is just fill time or build a foundation or emphasize something that we're going to build to a crescendo later. But at the end of a show, we want you thinking about 2 matches and then a little bit about something else. You know, like most people just are going to go, oh yeah, there's that. And there's that. Oh, yeah, and then there's that thing, too. And that is about all you can accomplish in about 2 hours of a wrestling show, or that if that's all you ought to aim to accomplish. You want to have – and it's not that other things shouldn't matter. It's just 2.5 things should really stand out. If everything is even, nothing stands out. And then you're leaving it up to the viewer to remember everything or pick and choose what's important. And I think your job as a booker, as a promoter – as a TV show producer, is decide what's important, decide what will make the biggest difference for your business, and make sure almost everybody watching knows what those 2 things are that matter the most. And you know, I don't think we got that, even with Paige and Punk. You know, by the end of the show, that was a bit of a distant memory. All right, we'll move next to Jay in Hartford. Jay, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What do you think of Dynamite tonight? Maybe Jay is muted. Maybe Jay fell asleep. We'll go back to Jay. We'll go instead next to – up next is Deke in Michigan. Deke, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Wade, man, you know, I've said this the last few weeks, and I'm kind of upset that I'm doing it because I'm already lubing you up with my $10 a month. I don't want to lube you up every Wednesday, you know, brother? Another.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, how else am I going to put it?
I could think of some other
million...
ways to go ahead.
Oh,
you
could
butter me up.
Well,
you could butter me up.
Well,
you know?
Okay, butter. Oh, well, is it not the same? I don't know where you're from. Wade, great. Wade, a million. I couldn't agree with you more. And I can I take? I have one point about the show. But since we're on it and you've been doing it all night, I want to start with you. There's not too many people that are saying anything negative about AEW. And I know you're not jobbing the entire product here, but you're being honest. And I'd like to know, because as I've told you before, as a fellow journalist, I appreciate you more than anything. Because, especially in today's day and age, there are so many people putting their own ideas, their own, even now political ideas, into wrestling. And, of course, our world is a mess right now, and everything matters. But, Wade, as a guy, and I'm not going to throw you out there, but you probably don't agree with a lot of other people as far as politically goes. And you call it straight down the middle. And I've listened to podcasts, Conrad, whoever, that go, well, Wade Keller says, but, and no, Wade Keller says, no, I'm not going to do that because I'm a journalist and da, da, da. No, I'm calling it straight down the middle. And I respect that so much, man. I respect that not only as a wrestling fan, as a fellow journalist. You're calling it the way you see it, man. And nobody else is doing that. Nobody is doing that. And again, I'm not blowing smoke up you, but where I'm going with this is this weekend. I see everybody else on earth. I'm going to Double or Nothing, and I'm going to this, and I'm going to that, and let's go. Can you explain to me the inside works of what's going on here? I know you're the older guy, you and Meltzer, the elder statesman in the, I guess, wrestling journalist bubble. All the young folks are like, we're going to Vegas, we're going to Vegas. But they do that with everything. Can you explain to me what's going on here? They don't do that with WrestleMania. Some did go to WrestleMania, but they don't go, I'm going to SummerSlam. I'm going to Survivor Series. I'm going to... They go to everything. What's going on here, Wade?
Well,
what's going
because
on the outside? Is it because they're getting access? What's going on? And I want to know that because you are the only one giving viable, like, hey, I'm calling this the way I see it. And everywhere else I look, they're not. And you are. But you're not also going to every show. And you do go to shows. You're not going to every show. And these other people are like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I think there's something to that, man. I really do. And I'm not trying to call out anybody, but, you know, I really respect you there. And I think these other people are just, like, having fun getting free tickets to stuff, dude. I'm not trying – and, again, I didn't say anybody's name, but come on, man.
I don't want to say that I follow everybody out there who may be you here, and I don't want to prescribe motivation.
I'm not trying to tell you to say this guy sucks and that guy sucks.
Right, right.
Have you the opportunity to tell everybody why you're the best, to be honest, man. Like,
sure.
Because you're fair.
Well, I'm sitting patiently letting you butter me up. I appreciate it. I'm not going to interrupt someone saying nice things. And I think what you're saying about me are points of pride in how I approach my job. And sometimes I think it can drive some people away who want to listen to brand booster podcasts. And Pro Wrestling Torch, from the beginning, is not a brand boosting form of journalism and wrestling analysis. And we've been through a lot of different mediums and ways of reaching fans, you know, through print newsletters, through 900 numbers, through 50,000 watt the second all sports radio station in the country, KFAN, for years, through apps and websites and podcasts before podcast was a word. As I say, we were doing audio shows back in 2003. We've reached a lot of different ways, but our brand and our approach, maybe we'd do better business if we were more of a booster and of the product and rode the wave of enthusiasm for this new alternative. But it's just not in my DNA to do that. But some people want that, you know, kind of local. You know, you can turn on sports radio in your local market, and there's people who are really critical of a team because that's their shtick. And then there's people who like work for the team but also host a radio show, and they're boosters, and we're all sad when they lose and happy when they win. And then there's people who are sort of in the middle. I don't want to say in the middle, but in a different category, which is we're not boosters, but we're also not doing a shtick to be the curmudgeon. We're just kind of calling it as we see it. You know, if the coach is good, if players are good, if it's a good decision, call it. And different people want different types of coverage of their pastime. And I don't begrudge that, but I think it's good to recognize that there are different ways to approach it. And the Torch is not a brand booster. We don't pick a side and root for them against the others. And I wouldn't want anyone on the team, of all the great people who contribute to the Torch branded podcasts and articles, I don't want anyone to be a booster for a brand or a booster for a wrestler. So I don't know. Kelly, what do you think?
Can I call you Kelly?
The bottle of blue.
Kelly, can I jump in? Can I jump in?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Kelly. Right. No. That's so hilarious because, again, I'm a journalist too. And I have friends that do the same thing. And my friends, what you just did is so hilarious because I have one friend in particular that goes, oh, wrestling's its own thing. You can't compare wrestling to anything. And even though I think AEW has severely fallen off in the last 2 years, but in WWE too in the last 20 years, but I'm like, it's just like the Lions, right? We're from Michigan, right? So the Lions, come on, man. You can't cheer for a bigger loser than the freaking Lions. But I'm like, I still want them to win, even though I know they're not gonna. But it's, you know, don't compare them to real sport. No, that's what it is. I like wrestling.
I got to give Kelly a chance to finish his thoughts.
Yeah, go ahead.
That he started. Yeah, go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, I will just say from my perspective, when I was in college and online wrestling journalism became a thing, because online had just become a thing, that's how old I am, it was two people I gravitated to. One was Wade, and one was Christopher Robin Zimmerman, because he was very funny. He doesn't really do it anymore, and if he does, I've lost him. Sorry. But I liked Wade because of the even hand, too. That is what drove me to his site. That's what I'll say. As for the question, the bigger question about the seeming the all-or-nothing nature of these fans, where they are just so, so in love with everything AEW does and there's nothing that they can do is wrong. I think you can look in a couple of directions. One is that they, I'm not going to say anyone's getting paid to do it, but it could be that in trying to become influencers, they are trying to strongly back a horse, and they know that they will grab hardcore fans that way. I think that's part of it. Also, I think it's the same kind of mentality that makes people, young people, like my daughter, who's 14, said that goes Facebook. That's like a grandpa site. And I'm like, my grandpa's never heard of Facebook. My mom's barely on it. It could be that this is cool to them because it's new. So they don't see the flaws as apparently as they see the flaws in WWE. And the flaws for me are more glaring in WWE right now, even though they're very, very glaring in both companies. But I think the nature of young people is to strongly stand for something, even when they don't have to, and to be rabid fans of their things. I think that's just the nature of youth.
I think there are things WWE won't admit to that they could really learn from AEW, and I think there are things AEW doesn't want to admit to this, but that they could really learn from WWE. There's room for critique, for criticism, and for recognizing what they do well in both companies. And, you know, depending on, I mean, there are people who like WWE better who do podcasts for the Torch than AEW, and people who like AEW better look down on them or think they're insane. And then there's people on the Torch who like WWE better who think AEW fans are, you know, delusional or you know, put on blinders or are selective and, you know, whatever. I mean, it can be partisan, but it's also different people like different styles of pro wrestling, and more power to them for that too. You know, not everything is objectively better or worse. Some things are, not everything is. And I'm fortunate. I've said this before. I am fortunate because of the job that I'm in, that I enjoy WWE and AEW right now. You know, and there's some people like, how can you enjoy WWE? Or other people like, oh, AEW is so frustrating. I enjoy both shows, but I'm also critical of both. I think WWE does a better job executing what it's trying to do than AEW does. I think AEW has way more room for improvement on what they're trying to do. I think they do a shoddier job of what their goal ultimately is. WWE is too polished and too staid and too heels dug into doing things a certain way. And they're so convinced that they do what they do so well that they limit themselves in other ways that would enhance the product greatly and easily and almost instantly. But different people hear different things when they hear, you know, criticism of a product and make assumptions. Anyway, we're more off track, but I think a show like tonight's Dynamite is kind of a launching point for that discussion on the strengths. And AEW is going to put their best foot forward, I think, on Sunday when it comes to a really entertaining 3+ hour world-class display of athleticism. But there will be some excesses. Some matches will be too long. A lot of high spots will not be sold. There'll be no selling. There's going to be things, but it's going to be enjoyable, even if there's things worthy of critique. Anyway, I think I'll throw back to you if there's anything else you want to say quick, but I do want to get to a couple of other callers before we get to our mailbag.
I got one and a half things. I was with you, right. And then you went. I was with you, and then you said what the main events for this pay-per-view were. And it was tag team, three man, five man, this man. I was like, oh, I don't care about that. And everybody just ripped on WWE for having a six-man tag in their main event. Whatever. I'm just saying.
What's
six
your
one
half?
Half of the other. Six and one. I mean, let's look at it. What are you doing? I did not see the first hour of this show. I did not. And from the sounds of it, it sounds like I didn't miss anything. What I'm calling is about Hangman Page. I called last week, and I think the guy blows. I ain't going to lie. I don't know why he's a champ. I've never seen anything in this guy. Okay. Well, I think he should lose. Or excuse me. No. I think he should win. I think Punk should lose at this pay-per-view. Why should he not?
Right.
What's a loss going to do to him? Let me just say this. I'm sorry, Wade. Let me say this.
Yep.
Because now we got something. Now we got something. Okay. I did something. Because he's done nothing. Who's he beaten? What has he done? His title reign has been garbage. You know, you've talked about it. It's been garbage. Okay, now I've done something. But now it also gives Punk's character something. I lost.
Yeah.
What do I do? And maybe you go to the next pay-per-view, whatever. I think he should lose. I think, as much as I don't like him, Paige should win.
Deke, oh, we got to go. I appreciate it. I want to cover that. Kelly, who should win on Sunday? Hangman or Punk?
I think they both – I think there's possibilities either way. I see what he's saying. As far as something for Hangman to hang his hat on, I would assume that this is designed to get the championship on Punk. But if it's designed to strengthen Paige as a character and as a champion by having him kind of go heel in order to try to silence his critics, then that can work if his critics show up on the show. If his critics become the announcers, if they become other wrestlers, even baby faces, and maybe he snaps and he takes it out on the Dark Order. I think there's a lot of fertile storytelling ground if he stays champion through nefarious means and turns heel as champion. I think I just talked myself into that.
I'll read an email from David from North Carolina. He says, I agree with your report 100% about Hangman Page and CM Punk. I'm excited for the match simply because I think it'll be good, but this storyline makes no sense because there's no clear motivation. Every action a character takes should have a motive behind it, or else your story will not resonate with your audience. People crave rhyme and reason in storytelling. We crave it everywhere. It's why we create conspiracy theories, to add rhyme and reason where we think it's missing. And in this case, it's very much missing. My main takeaway from this story is Hangman has a personality disorder. And he says, I hate to be bad about AW in this pay-per-view. It looks fantastic on paper, but it feels like it's missing about 2 weeks' worth of storylines that got left off somewhere on the cutting room floor. I mean, I think that's well put. Maybe this is leading somewhere else, and Hangman retains, and he turns heel, and it'll seem like he's got – because I like the swagger Hangman had tonight, but I think that swagger should have been there as a babyface, not, you know, personality disorder dick version of Hangman that – I mean, but I don't have faith, Kelly, that – or an expectation that this is part of a story arc. I think Punk wins and Hangman moves on to something else, and they split. I don't think, maybe there's a rematch, you know, on Dynamite if they think they can get more out of it, but I think they're moving on, and I think Hangman's moving out of the world title picture.
Yeah, that is what I think, too. I think the other option is potentially more interesting, but I do think you're right. I think that's the way they're headed. Follow-up for Paige is going to be key. Otherwise, he's going to be remembered as really, really, really a bad champion who was in a position that was way, way over his head, just punching way over his head. If they don't get him into something interesting right away and keep him high on the card, then he's really going to suffer in the aftermath of this.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, thanks for holding so long. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
My first question is on Wardlow. I don't know if you saw that devastating powerbomb he did to the security guard. It's making me wonder, who are these guys?
Between the cage and the ring? Yeah.
Who are these guys that AEW is getting to play this role? Like, is there anybody that stands out that's a major star on the independent circuit that's filling this role? Because that's quite impressive bump that guy took tonight.
Yeah, I mean, they you know, there's local wrestlers or wrestlers that who are training, and they come in and take a bunch of bumps. I thought it was needlessly cartoonish aspects of war, though, when MJF has been, you know, the dumb fake concessions or popcorn table, you know, in the concession when Wardlow was escorted in. And the MJF Wardlow thing has a lot of strengths in terms of, you know, it's the most fleshed out and I think most, you know, storyline driven match on this show. But the cartoonish aspects of Wardlow beating up security guys with no ramifications, I guess, Kelly, is the story. They're hired hands from MJF, so it's okay. Like, I mean, to me on my list, like my you know, wrestling booker / promoter constitution of rules and best practices and rules of engagement and norms, and we can shorten the title of this someday. It is done. But one of them would be wrestlers don't get to beat up civilians and backstage people without it being a big deal. Like, you don't, wrestlers shouldn't just for the ephemeral moment of, oh my God, I can't believe he threw a fireball at him, or, oh my God, he just did that, beat up that security guy. Like, the guy's just doing his job backstage unprovoked. He got a fireball to the face, and that should be the biggest story of the week in your company. A heel should do that. There should be major ramifications. There should be major repercussions, and that's not going to happen. And Wardlow is beating up a ton of security guys who are just there. Well, actually, they were a little bit less just there doing their job, but into sort of this parody, almost like they're mocking pro wrestling, like a parade of security guys coming in one after another, haplessly coming at him. Like, I mean, I know Dusty did it with a bionic elbow and the Horseman. You know, I mean, I'm not saying there isn't precedent for this, but it felt like it almost seemed like what you would do if you were going to make fun of pro wrestling. And I think you have to watch out for that. I think you can get wrapped up in, oh, wouldn't it be cool if Wardlow did this? He'll be a killer. He knocks one guy after another, after another, after another, after another, after another, after another, after another. But it just gets to a point where I think you get numb to it, and it seems like it's more of a cartoon. And I think the MJF Wardlow storyline deserves something that is a little tighter and a little more grounded. Kelly.
And it's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube, too, once you've introduced the fact that these guys can do this without ramification. Rip Rogers has always said you don't want to pull out these crazy bumps in small spots because you can only do so many. And I know Rip Rogers, but that's true. And
it makes a lot of sense a lot of the time. I mean,
yes, I know.
The message, not the messenger.
Right. He's, you know, you agree with him and you wish you didn't. And that's okay. But that's true for storytelling beats too. If you make it so this doesn't matter, then it's very hard to make it matter again. The best time to get that right was when this company started, to establish right away that there are rules for people, and, you know, use real life as a guide. It's that simple. Crime is crime, and that can work. That can gain you heat. And it's very hard to generate heat when you can do these things without repercussion. It drives me crazy, and I think the worst part is fans, by and large, don't think about what they're missing because this is just the way it is.
Yeah. I said that about even like, you know, years ago about social media and wrestlers kind of not doing this hardcore angle on TV and then going on social media and congratulating the person you just did this heinous act to for a great performance. Thanks for being there. We were there for each other. It's like people know it's not real, but there's, you know, there's a time and place for that. You know, Todd Martin talked about, you know, Jericho and Kenny Omega deconstructing their match on a podcast. So it's like, do that in a few years, not when you're, you know, you might do a rematch. But anyway, yeah. So sometimes viewers don't know what they're missing because there aren't promoters showing them how it can be different. And, you know, when you're a longtime fan and you've seen the diversity of successful products in this country and worldwide over so many different eras, there's a lot to pull from, and pro wrestling can be presented in a lot of different ways with different disciplines. And AEW is one, but it's refreshing for a lot of people because of their history with WWE and other products. But there are ways to tighten it up in a way that I think would just objectively improve it and sometimes there's excesses, including, you know, the lights out stuff, which I groaned about from day one. All right, Ryan, back to you.
Got a question on Chris Jericho. You know who might have taught him the fireball throwing trick? Was it Jerry the King Lawler, or maybe when he was younger, Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert taught him a thing or two about it, or was it over in Japan he learned how to do it?
Oh, yeah, lots of people are throwing fireballs. But, I mean, Jerry Lawler certainly did, and Eddie Gilbert, who, you know, idolized Jerry Lawler growing up, did it. But a fireball has been a staple of wrestling heels, more than just in those circumstances. Kelly, do you have any others that are your favorite usage of it, or other examples that come to your mind?
If you would have asked me without any saying the places he's worked, where he might have gotten it, Japan probably would have stuck out just because he was there at a time when they were raising the stakes a lot and doing things like that. I don't know that I've ever seen a fireball angle that I absolutely loved. I don't know that it's my favorite trope in wrestling. So none stand out, but I would have guessed maybe that was a Japan trick he learned.
All right. Very good. What else, Ryan?
My final question is on Owen Hart. I know I've met him once before, and he was super nice to me, but I believe it was like Jim Ross or one announcer said that no one's ever said a bad thing about him, but pretty sure like Stone Cold Steve Austin had some choice words for him before. And is there anybody else that you know that didn't like care for Owen? Like, was the announcer telling the truth that when he said that? Because it's hard, you know, to please everybody, I think.
Yeah, no, Owen was super duper nice. And Steve Austin's criticism of Owen is about a very specific thing that was a traumatic and a career altering, you know, injury. But that's, you know, it's very specific. It doesn't have to do with Owen's personality. You know, Owen was a jokester and beloved, and I think it's an accurate portrayal of him as one of the nicest people. I don't. That's not just after his death that people have said that. That predated his tragic death. Cool, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, you bet. Kelly, you back me up on that?
I can, because I've read a lot of wrestling books, and many of them mention Owen, and all of them speak in glowing terms. Yeah. Owen was my favorite wrestler at the time of his death. I took it extremely hard. Mm-hmm. And I've just eaten up every piece of Owen love that I can. And like you said, the only thing, yeah, there's nothing else. I mean, the closest anybody gets is to say he would rib you so hard and so relentlessly that you'd want to get mad at him, but you respected that it was funny, and he did it with a smile on his face, so you didn't get to be mad at him, which made you madder. And my favorite story about him is when he was doing hardcore, with Mick Foley on the road in house shows, and he wouldn't sell anything until Mick hit him with a bag of packing peanuts. And then he fell over like it was a ton of bricks. And Mick pours the packing peanuts on him, and Owen starts making packing peanut angels in the pile of packing peanuts in the match. He was a goof, a jokester. He was loved. I would have named my son Owen James Wells. I was going to name my son after him. I didn't have any sons. My daughter has told me that she would get me an Owen someday. Wow. I hope that's true.
Very cool. I'm glad I threw you on that one.
Me too.
All right, let's move to our next segment here. Javier, I would have hyped you longer, but as I saw the clock ticking, I'm like, I don't know, maybe he's going to have to hang up because the show's running so long that I don't want to put pressure on him to stick around if he's got to get up in the morning. But thank you for holding, and I am excited that you stuck around and eager to hear what you have to say about Dynamite and our conversation so far. How's it going?
It's going good. What a day for all the regulars to call.
Tell me, yes, I'm sorry, yes. I mean, not all the regulars, okay. But yeah, most of them, yes.
We're not going to, well, Kelly, we're not going to have time to talk about board games, so.
I know. I barely have time to do my shtick where I pretend not to know you. Like, there's no time.
Yeah, no, seriously. Just real quick, playing Sleeping Gods. Really cool game, about 4 hours into it. But anyway, my thought and the main reason I was going to call, I want to talk no matter what the hell happened on the show, because for the last few pay-per-views, it feels like, you know, we're coming up to the pay-per-view and it's like, oh, we haven't really set up anything and they got to quickly set things up. Like, you know, you're starting, you know, last minute for the exam. It feels like this time they procrastinated too much, because other than the Wardlow match, I think that's the only thing that's had any really good build to it. I was surprised to hear that the pay-per-views this weekend, because it's like, I only knew about like 3 matches that were happening. Because I had no idea House of Black versus Death Triangle. I thought that probably had already happened on Rampage or something. The Hookhausen and the Jade Cargill Anna Jay match, all those, you know, surprise, these are happening. As far as the build for the other match, and Hardys and Young Bucks is something I also, you know, forget that is happening, because they've done next to nothing for that. The build to that has been very almost passive aggressive, of them just, you know, walking across each other. There's been nothing to really build for it. I mean, we still have Rampage to go, but still. The MJF Wardlow is built well, and the thing with the Jericho, I do like the Jericho Wizard thing, but as a lower card gimmick, like, you know, if he were wrestling, you know, if he were feuding with the Best Friends, it does not really feel like it computes with what's going on with the Santana Ortiz, Eddie Kingston, and the Blackpool Combat Club. The two completely different.
I guess I like it. You got to get more money out of Jericho, so I like it more as a gimmick for the Best Friends, not just for him dealing with the Best Friends. It just seems like it should be beneath somebody who's supposed to be making money at the top of the card.
Yeah, but I'm just saying in general, you know, setting aside, you know, where you want him, where you think he'd do the most amount, at least the you know, it does seem like a more, you know, lower key, almost like it kind of fits in with the dance number that they did when he was with him and MJF, that kind of thing. It feels more like that. But when you have like a group, you know, that is serious and as serious and as badass as, you know, the people they're going up against, and the fact that it's going to be, you know, a hardcore match, it doesn't feel like it is, particularly when you have Goon number one. I can't be bothered to remember their names. Goon number one with the switchblade and combing his hair, which I like the image. It kind of feels out of place. It's, you know, in general, but when you marry it to what the storylines are going on, it's like these don't feel. It feels like it's a cartoon going up against real life.
Nope, I think that's fair criticism, and I think it is the main criticism that people would have of that.
As far as the Hangman Page and CM Punk build, I understand where Craig was coming from, because I felt the same way. I just don't think it was good in terms of like to build the match, because, you know, I've never been a huge fan of CM Punk. There's always been something that about him that's rubbed me the wrong way. And like, it felt like he was like the imaginary picture. Cause I obviously don't know the guy, but the imaginary picture I have of Punk based on, you know, what, from the pipe bomb promo onwards, and everything that, you know, the time he's took off wrestling and all this stuff, you know, that picture was reinforced by the promo that Hangman Page did. Now, but this is all exists in my head, so it's speaking to me. But I'm like, I'm pretty sure I am like not on the I'm not the average person, you know, for this. So it kind of felt like he wanted to say something. And I mean, and he even mentioned it because he basically came out and said, there's stuff I want to say in this promo, but I changed my mind, but I hate you for reasons. That was essentially his promo.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, which I mean, and I understood because it's like, you know, I don't like Punk for reasons. I don't want to talk about those reasons right now because they all might be in my head. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, so I'm like, I understand what you're kind of doing, but it's like, yeah, it doesn't make sense. But I also want to criticize Punk for the promo because he's standing there and saying, oh, this is just business. And I'm like, okay, you're saying it's just business, like, oh, I'm just, you know, it's just my turn to be taking a shot at the title. This is just business, and not selling at all that he's come back from retirement, and, you know, here he has a chance to win a world championship again. That hasn't really been touched on. That should be a much bigger deal than, you know, the way that's portrayed for him to come out and say, oh, it's just business. I mean, I could understand, you know, he might be doing it again into his head. That might be the story, but it doesn't work. I mean, the only way that you can kind of square this peg is if one of the two are becoming heel at the pay-per-view, are going to be, you know, turning heel. I think if Punk turns heel, it would make sense because then the promo that Hangman Page gave makes sense because they could say, see, this is what I was talking about. Or otherwise, you know, what the email that you read, you know, if Hangman's the one who goes heel, it's like, you know, it just the pressure got to him and he snapped. So that's the only way that this promo, but I agree with you. I don't know if they thought that far ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, good points. I'm kind of nodding along and I get what you're saying. Kelly, anything you want to say in response to Javier's points on that?
No, I think we're pretty well in agreement here on what we're getting and maybe in what we're not getting. Like you said, it seems like it's subtext and wrestling doesn't typically work when it's being subtle and that's what's happening here.
Well, let me read Zach's email. Zach in Texas.
I love Zach.
He says, yeah. gentlemen, maybe I need to get my TV fixed because the Hangman Punk promo I saw was excellent. We got a fired up Hangman contrasted with a calm Punk. Well, that I agree with. That was very true. We finally got some context about Hangman's demeanor. He gave his mission statement about not just defending the title against Punk, but defending AEW from Punk. Okay, there's some vagueness, but I think the message is clear that Hangman feels like he's defending the company from what he believes Punk stands for, which is apparently something that's an anathema to AEW in Hangman's mind. Manufactured is everything that comes out of Edge's mouth these days. This felt like Hangman believed everything he said, which in turn translates to the crowd believing it. It's a battle of two big stars, and I, for one, can't wait till Sunday. I mean, I think that's what they were going for. I mean, I think that's a good summation, Kelly, but isn't our critique that, and it's in here, there's a vagueness, as Zach said, to the message. And I just think you got to tell us, what does Punk stand for that you're defending AEW against? And if you're the guy representing AEW, and that's supposed to resonate with us, why are you being such a dick? And why is Punk the guy who, if you turn down the volume or don't understand English and you're just watching, seems like a much more calm, cool, and nicer guy? Punk's not trying to be arrogant. He's not trying to represent something bad. So if you take Zach's argument and go, well, that's the defense of it, we got to know what Hangman is defending AEW from, why he's defending AEW from Punk. And then also we have to believe that's a bad judgment on his part or misjudging Punk, because it seems clear they want people to cheer Punk beating Hangman if that's what happens Sunday. Kelly, you first, then Javier.
If this was the emotion was there, like, I don't think we're disagreeing with anyone who's saying that they were trying to, I think we all agree on what the intent of this was, in terms of what we were supposed to see in both guys. But this is, I mean, for people who don't follow the other channels of the product, this was just one step up from the word salad of an Ultimate Warrior promo. Like, you walk away thinking, man, he was awesome, but I wonder what the hell he was talking about. I didn't think he was awesome, but I mean, people did. And I think we agree more with those who are disagreeing with us than they think. But but I don't know that everybody's taking into account what non-super fans are going to think of this. And I think about the second million. I don't use the second million term, but I am going to steal it from here on out and use it all the time. I think we're thinking about the second million, and those who are, I don't want to say trashing it, I don't think we're trashing this, those who are criticizing it are thinking about as well.
And I want to underline everything that I advocate that will grow AEW's audience to 2 million or approach 2 million is not in any way coming at the expense of this, of the enjoyment of the first million, the enjoyment of the product the first million have. I think the first million will enjoy it more. I think AEW is settling for an audience that is so enamored and so appreciative of AEW's strengths and the contrasts with WWE and just their strengths, that they're settling for not making it as good as it could be for that first million. And the side effect of that is also not appealing and growing to that second million. I think sometimes people think it's a zero sum game, and the half of the first million are going to enjoy the product less if they start appealing to the second million. And I'm not talking about dumbing down the product or doing anything that I think will take away from it. I think people might think it would take away from the product if they packed less into the two-hour show. I think once a more artfully produced and spaced out version of what AEW does well is presented to them, almost everybody would like it better. Javier, now your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been a fan of the second million, at least the framing of it, just because just framing it that way, that's kind of what WWE has always done, is try to, find the more common, fan, and then that's, I think, what ended up hurting him a lot. So I don't necessarily like framing on that. I prefer framing it in terms of, just improve your product. And I think the best way you do that is by slowing down and concentrating on what's important and not make everything all equally all important, and make sure that you don't need to handhold someone in, so much that you need to walk them step by step. You can leave some stuff to Google basically, but you don't want to leave so much where you have no idea what is going on. Watching the best of Super Juniors, there's several wrestlers from outside of New Japan, so that they're participating. Ace Austin from Impact, Wheeler Yuta from AEW, Titan from CMLL, and El Linderman from Gleet, whatever the hell that is.
From Gleet, and then Alex Zane.
Well, Alex Zane has been on Strong a lot. I'm not entirely sure where he's if he's representing.
I don't know either.
Kevin Kelly has done a really good job, and Charlton when he's been with him, of explaining exactly who these people are and why we should care. And I feel like I know. I mean, I know Ace Austin and some of those guys, because of I watch a lot more of the wrestling, but like. El Linderman, outside of him showing up a few times, and they were supposed to be big things for AEW, except the pandemic kind of shut that down. That's my only experience with him. They did a good job explaining who he was, particularly since he was main eventing the previous night's show to prepare you for that main event, so you know why Linderman is there, and all that was told to you in commentary. Because he wasn't necessarily running down 300 things, the Rampage, the pay-per-view, the next week's show, and was explaining to you, why this is more important, why this match is important, why you should care beyond the fact that you just want to see one guy beat the other. And that, you know, but that's like what I think, you know, you could do that. You could bring in the RH people. You could bring in, you know, people from New Japan, just, you know, and you just have to take the time to explain to people, you know, what they are. And then if they want to know more, then they can, you know, look it up themselves. But, you know, at least give them the bullet points of why you should care about some of these people.
And I would say, too, at some point, there's a lot of great talent out there and a lot of talent that pockets of fans, big pockets of fans, are excited about. But is there room? You know, I mean, there's some great centers in the NBA, but you don't need four starting centers on your team. And you don't need a bench in the NBA of 10 players who deserve time on the court. You've got to pick your guys and go with them. And it feels like there's not a talented wrestler with a pocket of fans who they've earned wrestling in another company in the United States or in Japan that Tony Khan doesn't want to bring in and put on Dynamite and have Excalibur give us a briefing on. And I just philosophically disagree with that. I think you end up with diminishing returns. I think you end up with people who fans going with whiplash. Like, I was going to be into that guy, but I haven't seen him for 6 weeks, or I haven't seen him for 3 weeks, or he's around, but I don't really know why I should care about him. And then they get replaced by people who are coming in and they don't get enough. I mean, you can write a novel and you can have great ideas for characters, but they belong in four separate books, not all packed in chapter after chapter, where you've gotten people invested in one character. And then in chapter five, you're not talking about that anymore, but you've introduced three others. And then three chapters later, you're back to somebody in chapter one and the other people it's just like that is not appealing to the first million. People are watching, the first million are watching in spite of that, not because of it. And I disagree with the comparison of, you know, WWE is doing something deliberately to appeal to 2 million people. I think with WWE's head start and resources, they should be appealing to 3.5 million people if they did some of their things better. My argument with AEW is optimism. I think AEW's strengths and talent, they should be at 2 million now. And it's apologists in complacency and the bubble that is causing them to drive away or not grow to 2 million by now. And I just think it's a defeatist attitude and a narrow vision for what AEW's strengths, the number of people that what is good about AEW could be drawing on a weekly basis by now. That is not dumbing down the product or trying to go mainstream or taking away anything good. It's doing what they do better, but also doing less of what they do well to enhance the things that they're focused on to be the best they can be.
Yeah, I'm just using the number of the because I personally am more bearish in terms of viewers for anything on TV now, because as time's gone on, you know, there's a lot more things competing for attention. So I'm not. That's the only reason I'm saying like specifically looking for, sure. For a second. You want to try to grow the audience, but because of the actual overall. You know, battlefield of entertainment choices that they're out there. You know, I don't know exactly how much, you know, growth they are, which is why I prefer
Javier,
to view it from the lens of. Yeah, okay.
Do you know how many people watched the first episode of AEW within 7 days of it airing back on October 2nd, 2019? Was it?
Yeah,
do you remember the number?
Like,
do you have a best guess?
No, I don't remember. I don't remember off the top of my head.
No, 1.741 million. Watched the first episode. 1.4 million on average watched the first the night it aired, and then they added another 330,000 after that in the following 7 days. So my point is, those people are out there, and that was before they had Punk and you know, Adam Cole, and I mean, it's just like, so I guess I think they're out there, and your argument might be, well, you know, they'll sample it, but there's so many other things, you know, Survivor finale and spoilers, please. And
you can pretty much make the same argument for a lot of like other TV shows. Because in general, the highest watermark of any TV show is going to be, you know, particularly if it's like a branded one, your highest viewership is going to be in the first one. And then because people are going to be interested in it, and then, you know, they might, you know, because of the fact that there's that much more competition, it might just not be for them. You know, they might say, oh, this might be it. And then just give it the one shot and then go on from there, which is why a lot of times on TV shows, you'll end up seeing, you know, quote unquote stunt booking, where you'll bring in like a, you know, a big name actor in for the show to try to get more people in. Same thing with comic books, because that, you know, in comic books, you know, they constantly are now relaunching number one issues because they're expecting, you know, because that gives you your bump. But then, like, people, you know, by the time you hit your fifth issue, that, you know, usually by the time you hit your third issue, that's what your watermark is. And no amount of how good your writing gets to that point, it generally makes an issue until you either bring in, like, a stunt writer or a stunt, more like a stunt artist, or you basically just, yeah, you know, shut down the run and then just, you know, say, oh, we're launching a number one, or you create a big event kind of thing, which is, you know, and that's kind of like the way I view it, which, I mean, again, I mean, we're arguing the same thing, just we're just looking at it from different perspectives where, sure, you know, there are things you can do to improve, because, I mean, you know, because if your problem is the fact that you're not right, your writing is not good, no amount of relaunches is going to, you know, no amount of relaunches or stunts is going to basically keep you, you know, keep you floating, which, you know, so, I mean, in principle, we agree that, you know, it'll behoove them, we haven't used that in a while, to slow down and, you know, slow down and focus on what's important and, you know, really focus on who your core group is, because it feels like that was going well like a while ago where you had your core group and every now and then they would insert one of these, you know, outside, you know, darlings, you know, either from New Japan or from where have you. But then you still had your core group and then you had like these guest stars essentially. Now it feels like the guest stars are just basically like 90% of your show. And then you only have like two or three tentpoles. I mean, is Darby Allin going to be involved in any way, shape, or form in the pay-per-view? And you would think that Darby Allin would be someone that you would want to, you know, be involved.
Greg Parks wrote a column in this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, posted online today, of the wrestlers not on this pay-per-view. You know, I mean, it's you can build a whole pay-per-view practically around it. I want to note, I think it was 6.2 million people watched the NBA last night. You know, NHL playoffs are doing, you know, 1.3, 1.4 million. There's, you know, there are audiences that are bigger than what AEW is drawing. Point taken in terms of, you know, being more bearish than bullish on what the upside for AEW is. But as you talked, you know, you're kind of, you know, going, but if they did this and this and this, and that's what I'm advocating, you know, is that do those things you just mentioned, and I think they will grow. I think they have underperformed after adding Brian Danielson, CM Punk, and Adam Cole. And I think and yes, they lost Kenny Omega and Cody, and they practically lost the Young Bucks, whatever's up with them. I don't want to overplay that. You know, they've lost Kenny and Cody in particular. So I don't know. Anyway, Kelly, Javier and I have been talking. What do you think?
I feel like most of it's been covered, obviously. Yeah. I do agree that I thought it would be bigger by this point with the number of big names, but there are diminishing returns. I would love to have a Kevin Kelly around, as Javier stated, to really give the download on that. He is so good at introducing people, but I feel like Forbidden Door is supposed to get by on the fact that it's kind of an invasion, and that's an oversimplification, but it's kind of what this is. But it doesn't really feel like an invasion when the company's been invaded by four or five new talents every single month. There's no sense of continuity, or there's no sense of what AEW is, because it's growing all the time. And that Forbidden Door is going to be a really, really good card. I'm sure I will thoroughly enjoy the show, but I don't know who it's going to grab.
Yeah, beyond the people who bought tickets within 3 minutes of them going on sale. Yeah,
right, right.
Yeah. No, I know. And I mean, it's like, you got them. Now do other things to get more. Javier, what else for us?
Yeah, since New Japan got brought up, I did love, I am a huge Roppongi Vice fan. I have a really big soft spot for Rocky Romero in my heart. Really enjoy their pairing. I, you know, enjoyed seeing them go up against FTR and, you know, with the story there, because, you know, like I said, I followed them. So, you know, them going for the titles, I enjoyed that. I really enjoyed, I was actually surprised, because one of the things I was actually going to mention, had this not had happened, was what was your over-under, whether it was going to be a New Japan sort of invasion at the pay-per-view. But apparently we got that today. And Kelly just mentioned about, you know, it's supposed to be an invasion, but we've had a lot of Japanese talent. However, because I think you know, since you have the whole faction system in Japan, you could still play it off as an invasion if your, like, core storyline is one of the factions. And since we saw United Empire being the ones showing up, I think that might be a way that they, you know, how they can run a story of, like, you know, why this is important, where you have the United Empire faction, you know, be the invaders of AEW.
Kelly, your thoughts?
I really like Roppongi Vice too, but they're getting thrown out there cold in front of an audience that mostly doesn't know who they are. I think it was Craig earlier, I can't remember now, who said, who cares about Roppongi Vice? And I'm thinking, I do, but I don't blame you for not caring, because they haven't really been introduced to this company in an overall meaningful way. And it's really hard to just convince somebody, hey, these guys matter because they did stuff somewhere else, and here's a match. There was no lead-up to this.
But Kelly, what about the fact that Trent has a question mark at the end of his name on Twitter, and his handle is Trenty Locks? You don't think that? You don't think that's symptomatic of a little bit of clubhouse stuff that drives people away and makes them think, well, this, you know, I don't know what's going on here? I mean, I just want AEW to be more cognizant of that, and you know, anyway. I mean, it's a small thing, but it's just like, well, what and why?
I'm not saying this is what you want to put in the middle of your show when you're, you know, supposed to when you're plugging on your go home show to when you're setting up a pay per view in a couple of days, you know. But I'm just like, overall, in a vacuum, I really enjoyed them and liked the whole thing.
Unlike Kelly Javier, I knew what you were saying. I knew what you were getting at. Can't believe how hard Kelly came back at you.
Yeah, no, man, that hurt my feelings, bro. a couple facts about a Great O'Con that you missed, Kelly. He dresses up like and he comes to the ring as a Jiangqi, which is in the West we call it the Chinese hopping vampire. Where you have, like, you know, he has like a mask over his face, and then, you know, he comes out and hops to the ring. That was actually what he was when he was Great O'Karn. He was basically, it's essentially a hopping corpse is what the mythological creature is. That's what he was essentially representing in when he was on
in
excursion as the Great O'Karn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he's also a real-life superhero. He actually stopped a drunk man from kidnapping a girl on a train. So he actually got some press for that.
Yep.
But, yeah, he's my former co-host on the New Japan Private Podcast. She does not like him. he ended up growing on me. I like him a lot. He is a little bit – I understand why he's polarizing, because, like, from what I've heard and seen online, people either love him or hate him. I end up liking him, although I do agree that, particularly after the G1 last year, because I thought that was his big test, he had for me pretty much the most boring matches and also some of the best matches. So he was like all over the place. So he could have really boring matches and then he could have some really good matches. And I think it really depends on his opponent. So, that was, more on, Great O'Con, but, you know, I'm hoping, and he's like really over in Japan too, so he got himself over. And, the poor security guy who got killed, apparently his name is Leo Sparrow. He tweeted out that he's still stuck in the ring and he needs help.
I wrote in my TV report at pwtorch.com, and I did not know about his tweet at the time, obviously, but I instantly wrote, they 3 months from now, with no explanation and no attention drawn to it, he needs to crawl out from under the ring alive on Dynamite. And just dust himself off and walk to the back.
Next time, and this would, you know what, this would be, you're going to love this way, because it's going to, you know, I think it's going to make you happy. Don't do any more table spots until October, and somebody does a table spot and pulls out a table and there's like the remains of a corpse in there. And that would be him. That would be, you know, that would be perfect.
That's a little dark for me, but I'm fine with 3 weeks from now, someone pulls the table out from under the ring, or 3 months from now, and he's hanging on to the other side, and they just drag him out. And he's, like, hanging on to it, and then he just dusts himself off and walks away.
Yeah, or, if you're going to be nicer about it, I've decided to tie it into Halloween. That way, you know. But, yeah. The,
oh, okay, yeah. October, I get it, yeah.
That's a – yeah, yeah. So, but, yeah, I think that's pretty much all I got. Yeah, I didn't take too much notes because I didn't want to talk about how horrible they're because I'll plug going VIP, go VIP because I'm going to be using the torch and all the in order to research everything that's happened because I really don't know how we got to some of these matches so for the pay per view. So I'm going to have to go back.
Yeah.
Despite watching every episode of Dynamite, not Rampage, and this is the first time where I'm actually lost and I have no idea why there's some matches that are happening on the card. So this is the first pay per view where that's happened because I haven't been watching Rampage for a while, unless I get a call from Tyler that in that case I'll make an exception and watch it. But I've got since September and then I haven't been lost in the pay per views until this one. So.
Interesting. All right, cool. Javier, always great hearing from you. Check out Javier's pay-per-view preview this weekend. Yep, at pwtorch.com. Kelly, should I read a couple emails to close out here, or do you got to go?
Oh, I never sleep. Go ahead.
All right. Joshua says, hey, sharing a couple thoughts I had watching Dynamite tonight. I can't help but feel like the AW tag titles are the least important tag story going on right now. FTR feel like they have the most important belt in AW. Their defenses feel like the biggest matches, and they feel like the hottest tag stars and are overshadowing Jungle Express. After the excellent Hardys promo, I also felt that match overshadows AW tag team title defense on Sunday. Yeah, I mean, for a show that was going to, or a promotion that's going to build up tag teams, the triple threat match was, it's fine. It's a bit of a WWE trope to have, the singles wrestlers face off, one representing the team. But at least it got them out there. The Hardys promo elevated things. FTR with their non-AEW belts elevating things. And then he also says, my second thought is more of a pet peeve. According to Jim Ross, every wrestler is here for the big money, which seems to fly in the face of many of these wrestlers' gimmicks, storylines, and actual public personas. I'm all for talking about the winner's purse, but I roll my eyes when JR says this about everyone. I do think Jim Ross thinks a lot about money, and I am a fan of talking about, wrestlers wanting to win in order to earn more money. But he's got a point, Kelly. Maybe it'd be better for Jim Ross to soften that a little bit and focus more on the spirit of competition and the pride in being the best and that money is a perk that comes with it. Has that ever struck you?
Yes, that always strikes me. And I do think that there needs to be a balance because I don't like it either when it becomes all about money, especially when it's a baby face. But, you can easily reframe it as he's got to get to the pay window. This is his livelihood, and MJF screwing him over and over is taking away his livelihood. It's not just ruining him in a mental state and in terms of professional pride. He's taking away his livelihood. I think that's all very valuable, even if you're not saying he's here for the money all the time. It's a small pet peeve of mine, too.
Yeah. Let's see. JB in Detroit says, given that Adam Cole and Samoa Joe will be facing each other for the first time at Double or Nothing, despite the fact that their careers overlapped in NXT, it got me thinking, what was a dream match that ever happened between two wrestlers who were in the same promotion at the same time? And also, since Cole and Joe will be wrestling at the finals of the Owen Hart tournament, does each wrestler compare to Owen and which represents Owen most closely, both in the ring and in promos? As always, love the show and go VIP. I've never thought that the Owen tournament needed to be won by somebody who, I identify as being similar to Owen. In any way, I think the way to pay tribute to Owen is by having good matches and treat the tournament seriously and, have the winner be referenced after the fact in a way that makes the tournament seem prestigious. But that said, I don't think Samoa Joe or Adam Cole are super close to Owen. I guess Adam Cole more so body type, ring style. But there's, you know, something about, you know, the way Joe carved his path, despite having some things that were, you know, seen as negatives in terms of his body type and stuff early on. And maybe Owen, there's a comparison there. What do you think, Kelly?
Yeah, I thought about that going into the tournament too. Would they give this to somebody who was like Owen, or would they give this to somebody who really knew Owen? And neither of those things has to be the case. And I just kind of, as soon as I saw the bracket, I realized that neither one of those things was probably the way they were going. So I'm not too hung up on that. You could, I mean, whoever wins this, you could use it to prop them up and to have a sort of, I don't know if a kinship is really the right word, but have them be like a spiritual successor. You could do that. And you could have a heel use it for heat, but I wouldn't advocate for that because I don't think you need to taint the memory of Owen Hart any further than has been done at times. So I don't know. I just hope they get good matches out of it. In terms of dream matches, I think it's odd they're throwing this one out there just as a tournament finisher when it seems like Joe could have had a bulldoze through the Undisputed outside the tournament, whatever. They wanted to do a tournament. Dream matches that never happened, most of them involve somebody who wouldn't work against the other. I mean, Bret Hart versus Hulk Hogan comes to mind. I don't know how good that would have been in the ring, but Hogan wouldn't do business when he was asked to, so that's a match that never happened. I think you'd find that guys who should have but didn't face each other, there was usually a reason.
All right, we'll wrap up with Henderson and Charlotte. I'm surprised how much I'm enjoying the Wardlow story. I really hope Punk wins this weekend and Wardlow's the one who takes the championship from Punk down the road. He has a good argument for a rematch with Punk after their last meeting, and the crowd is into him. Now, that does plant an interesting scenario that was brought up earlier on the show, which is what if it's going to turn out that Hangman is right and he's not a dick? He's just trying to figure out a way to let fans know who the real CM Punk is. And we're not supposed to know what's happening yet. And it's they are accepting, not embracing, but accepting. They're resigned to the idea that maybe the hype for this match isn't the best because they can't show their hand yet. And we're meant to be kind of wondering where Hangman's coming from. But Punk's going to win, and he's actually going to end up being heel, and Hangman ends up being the babyface in this, even if that's not how the demeanor comes across. Maybe we can critique in retrospect the acting and some of the ways that they got to this point, and that ultimately, yeah, they have their eye on you know, even Wardlow as a babyface against Punk as a heel down the line. Kelly, what do you think of that twist?
I think twists like that are dicey because you're throwing away goodwill and good TV in order to tell something in the end. And if that is what happens, it'll almost be like a retconning and you'll say, well, was this always the plan or did they just have to save it? When Steve Austin turned heel at the end of the invasion angle and you had to ignore months of him beating up guys and then say, oh, he was with it all the time. But yeah, he just had to beat up the guys he was working with the whole time. If there's a twist, it better be a real good twist, but no amount of good twist will have made the previous several weeks engaging TV. And I don't think you can, sacrifice weeks and weeks and weeks of very important storytelling building blocks just to get to a big moment. There's only one M. Night Shyamalan, and that's too many.
There you go. All right. Yep. He also says, if you play the Benny Hill theme while all the security guards run in one by one, it's way more entertaining. Until he sets one guy between the cage and the ring. I hope that guy is okay. JR calling Wardlow a stud every week is on par with Michael Cole saying, the big dog, boss time, or we the one. In my opinion, that's working against the cool factor. I'm 36, and my six-year-old has already placed a ban on me saying, dude. I understand, and I will respect his wishes. R.I.P. dreams of being a cool dad. I can tell Paige is trying very hard tonight, but I'm still meh about him on the mic. Punk was right. The promo seemed like he was just talking circles. The punch looked great, though. Thanks for all the great work. I can't tell you how much I appreciate these podcasts when things are crazy in the real world. It's the best kind of distraction, and it really means a lot. All the best. Kelly, any thoughts on any of that?
Thanks. I guess just about the end. It is nice to do some escapism. Can't live there all the time. But this is a very important outlet for us on this end of things as well. So thanks for the message.
I said that was it, but Javier has chimed in and he wants to know what you think of Wheeler Yuta's performance in the Best of Super Juniors. Is he making AEW proud?
Oh, I think so. And they're going to give him, he's not going to win the block. He's not going to be in the finals or anything, but they're going to make a good showing, and they will, by having him there, they will be able to bring something there storyline wise into Forbidden Door. Yeah, I think they're doing really well by all of the guests. Some are there to win some matches, and some, like Teton, are not going to win a lot of matches, but I think they're making wonderful use of who's there. I am caught up to today already, all five of the shows, five of the nine matches down for every wrestler, and I couldn't be happier with how the tournament's being booked.
Excellent. Kelly, thank you so much. Do you want to plug anything before we sign off?
PWT Talks NXT, NXT 8 years back. That is a VIP show. And this particular week, what's coming is the first ever takeover, not the one called nice. Arrival, but the first ever takeover. So very timely stuff here. Main event, you probably don't remember, was Tyson Kidd versus Adrian Neville, but it also had the famous Charlotte versus Natalya match. So Tom and I talk about that one.
Awesome. Go VIP, everybody. PWTorch.com/goVIP. And when you sign up, you can get $8 off with our first sale of 2022. The coupon code you want to use is SALE22. Enter that, you'll get $8 off. That gets you a whole month of VIP access for $1.99, including your chance to catch up on NXT 8 years back with Kelly and Tom. All right, thanks, Kelly. And we'll talk to everybody more this week. If you haven't gotten your mega dose of AEW from us yet and you want more, it's waiting for you over on our Blue Logo Show, the Weight Killer Pro Wrestling Podcast. Rich Van joined me for an in-depth preview of Double or Nothing. And then we followed that with last year's previously VIP exclusive, Double or Nothing post pay-per-view roundtable. So you can see where they were a year ago, what we had to say about it. And that is the second half of today's Blue Logo bonus show. So check that out, search Wade Keller and subscribe.